Before we get started with today's show, did any of you see that tweet that LeBron James sent out congratulating Conor McGregor on Saturday night? As a basketball and MMA fan, I gotta say, that really warmed my heart. So, if you enjoyed that moment as much as I did, you might also like the next episode of the Low Post podcast, where my guy, Zach Lowe, will have on Lakers beat reporter Dave McMenamin to talk about LeBron's Lakers and a job well done by rookie head coach Frank Vogel. So, if you want to check that out, you can find the Low Post podcast wherever you're listening to this show right now. Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA show!
Back in your life on this Monday, January 20th, 2020. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the program. I am excited about today's show. Back from Las Vegas. Dare I say, since I joined ESPN in June of 2018, that was the most fun fight week that I've ever had. And I've only been here around 18, 19 months, but still, that was incredibly fun. Got there Tuesday night all the way till Sunday. It was amazing doing all the shows, SportsCenter and Ariel and the Bad Guy there, and the radio shows and the coverage and the media days and the weigh-ins and the press conferences. All that stuff was just amazing. It was just such a fun time, and it was amazing to see like how the whole thing worked, just to see the muscle behind it all. It was just an absolute blast. And of course, the big news, Conor McGregor, victorious. The Notorious was victorious. 42nd win over Donald Cerrone. He defeated him in the first round via TKO. Unbelievable sequence. Starts out incredibly fast. Reminiscent almost of the Masvidal-Askren fight. Almost rushes into him. Overshoots his shot. Hits him with the knee. Hits him with the shoulder strikes. Then the leg, the head kick. And then the strikes at the end. I thought it actually went, 10 seconds too long, to be honest. But Cerrone didn't land a single punch. He outstruck him 19-0 in significant strikes. Second fastest win of Conor McGregor's UFC career. The fastest, of course, the 13-second knockout of Jose Aldo. And in doing so, he becomes the first fighter in UFC history to score finishes in the 145, 155, and 170 pound divisions. Isn't that incredible? And all the talk that maybe he was too small for 170 or that it was a miscalculation to fight at 170, absolutely not true, at least on this night. And it was good to see him back on top. Unfortunately for Donald Cerrone, he didn't do much to redefine his legacy. This was an opportunity to shed some of that, he doesn't win the big one, he doesn't rise to the occasion when, the spotlight is on him the most. It was reminiscent of his title loss to RDA around 4.5 years ago. He lost that fight in around 66, 67 seconds, and it just seemed like he just wasn't there. In fact, not only did he not redefine the legacy, he almost reinforced the legacy, which is unfortunate for him because, of course, he is one of the all-time greats and winning his fighter in UFC history and most bonuses and finishes and all this stuff, but just did not show up on Saturday. This was all about Conor from start to finish. And now, once again, he has all the momentum. He has all the leverage. He has all the options. And we wonder who can be next for him. Is it Masvidal? Is it Nate Diaz? Is it the winner of Khabib Ferguson? By the way, Ferguson is fighting on April 18th, at least as of right now. Can we stop disrespecting this guy and just talking about Khabib like it's a foregone conclusion that he's going to win that fight? I mean, really, the guy's on a 12-fight winning streak. Can we stop disrespecting him? But it could be the winner of that fight. And please let's not entertain the boxing stuff. Anyway, I think that it's always more exciting. It's always more interesting when Conor is around, when he's winning. It's even more so than that. And so we see where he goes from here. But what a fight week that was. He was on his best behavior the entire time. Phenomenal week for him. From the moment that we saw him, Wednesday, just was gracious, was happy to be there, was appreciative, was grateful, on his best behavior, was cool towards Cerrone. Cool towards him afterwards, towards his grandmother, not much to complain about. And we wonder now if the narrative back home in Ireland will be that the fans are starting to jump back on the proverbial bandwagon for him. And when can he return? Will it be before the summer, as he told me? So much to dissect on this program today. We're going to be talking all things 246 throughout the entire show. Many different perspectives. It was a fun night in Las Vegas from top to bottom. And we got a lot to discuss. So let's get into the lineup, and then we shall get to our first guest of the day, who had a phenomenal night as well. At 3:40, as you probably guessed, we'll be joined by Conor McGregor's head coach, John Kavanaugh. We have not heard much of, or I should say from, John Kavanaugh, other than some tweets. But I'm curious about the game plan. I'm curious about those shoulder strikes and if he thought it would go down like that. Remember, on Monday of last week, he said, beautiful destruction. That's what he predicted. And I think that qualifies as beautiful destruction. Conor McGregor's manager, Adi Attar, who's been by his side throughout his entire UFC run, will join us at 3:25. Curious to get his perspective on the business side of things, where he goes from here, all that stuff and more. 3:05, the man who is in attendance sitting in the front row with that Versace robe, Jorge Masvidal. See what I did there with the song, Versace. He will join us once again to get, we'll get his thoughts on what transpired, and in particular, Conor's comments about him afterwards. Drew Dober had a huge win at UFC 246 against Nasrat Haqparast, and I'm looking forward to talking to him. First time that we've ever had Drew Dober, I do believe, on the show. Also played, by the way, my interview with Conor McGregor in the locker room, in case you missed it, so I'm looking forward to that. Brian Kelleher, Boom Kelleher, longtime friend of the program, had a massive win over Ode Osborne. Got bumped to the main card after the Alexa Grasso versus Claudia Gadella fight got bumped off the card because Grasso missed weight. So what an opportunity for him to shine, and he did so, winning via submission. We'll talk to Holly Holm at 2:05 about her big win over Raquel Pennington. Diego Fajeda had an amazing victory over Anthony Pettis, subbed him. Very nice. And now he's won six in a row. So a guy who's been in the UFC since 2014, all of a sudden streaking these days. Michael Bisping will join us at around 1:40, talk about his book that's coming out in the United States this week, tomorrow to be exact. Also, he was with me all week long, annoying me quite a bit, if I'm being honest. But we'll get his thoughts on what Conor McGregor did in Las Vegas. Kevin Lee will join us. Found out last week he'll be headlining the March 14th card in Brazil against Islam Makhachev. But first, let us say hello to our first guest of the day. What a performance by that woman, Roxanne Modafferi. Everyone wrote her off. She was a massive underdog going into her fight against Macy Barber, and all she did was beat Macy Barber and hand Macy Barber her very first defeat in her pro career. And there she is, the one and only, the happy warrior, Roxanne Modafferi. Roxanne, congratulations. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
Oh, it's so great to talk to you. Everyone was writing you off. The odds were very much against you. Everyone thought, you know, this was just one step on the ladder that Macy was climbing en route to becoming the youngest champion in UFC history. We've talked about you being just so nice and gracious and the epitome of what a martial artist should be. But deep down inside, all that talk just kind of dismissing you, an OG, a veteran of the game, did it bother you? Did that talk fuel you? Did you want to prove the doubters wrong?
Man, I'm always the underdog, you know, so I just have to focus on myself and, you know, be confident in myself and go get it.
How confident were you going into this particular fight?
I felt great. I felt very confident. My coach, John Wood, made a great game plan for me. You know, move a lot of ins and outs, you know, try to split her strikes, you know, head out to the side, do a lot of split straights, and it worked. It worked really well.
And you mentioned that, you know, you're always the underdog, and I get that. But in this particular fight, it really did feel like you were being set up to be a stepping stone for her. Do you even hear that stuff, or are you that, you know, focused on the fight itself that at this point in your career, all that is just same old, same old?
I don't know. I didn't really feel used. You know, it was a great opportunity for me to fight a strong up and comer. You know, she's tough. I respect her very much. So it's okay, whoever.
Okay. Her father told Brett Okamoto yesterday that he believes and they believe that she injured her knee in the first 10 seconds of the fight. When did you realize that she was an injured fighter, that her leg was actually, you know, compromised?
In the second round, when I, you know, she was doing a very good job blocking my punches with her face, especially in the second round. You know, when I hit her with that straight, the jab, she went down. And she cried out, and I thought that was odd, you know, but I kept fighting. And then between rounds two and three, yeah, the doctor came and looked at her, and my coach said, you know, keep it standing, keep it standing. And I hit her. I was trying to keep it standing, and she went down. So I thought, okay, let's go down.
Wait a second. Was that Roxy trash talk that we just heard? I feel like that's the first time I ever heard you sort of trash talk.
Just saying facts.
So do you buy the notion that she injured herself in the first 10 seconds, or do you think they're trying to take something away from your performance?
No, I don't think it was the first 10 seconds. I mean, I think it was, you know, when I hit her in the second round, she stepped and went down funny. I think it was just that accident, you know. The step was the accident, not the punch.
And there was that moment with the doctor afterwards where he says in the corner that he believes she had a partially torn ACL. Were you aware of any of that talk? Were you aware that she was that injured?
I didn't hear any of that. I just knew that it was bothering her. And, you know, never once did it cross my mind to, like, kick the leg. You know, I think, you know, some people would, but I was going to take advantage of the mobility issue, but, you know, didn't really want a huge injury, you know, like that sucks really for anybody.
Right. And why didn't you want to attack that? I mean, at the end of the day, this is a fight and you win a fight by inflicting damage. You see that she's injured. Why not zero in on that?
Like, I didn't really think thoughts during the fight, but now I'm reflecting on it. You know, one of my philosophies as a martial artist is to win fights without causing actual pain. So that's why I love jiu-jitsu. You can choke them, they go to sleep or they tap out. So, I mean, it just didn't occur to me. Like, I wanted to punch her in the face. Mm. So, you know, that was kind of still the plan. I wanted to stay standing, do some striking. Then she went down. So I just, you know, kept going with that. And she was still pretty powerful. She reversed me, you know, so she still had a lot of fight in her and she was dangerous. So
I said but afterwards,
I winning the fight. So I'm still pleased with my performance. You know, I still had to work hard for that victory.
Of course. And I think a lot of people respect that out of you, that you didn't zero in on that. I said afterwards that, okay, maybe the doctor didn't stop the fight, but considering how injured she was and how much pain she appeared to be in, that her corner should have stopped the fight. Live to fight another day. You're a young fighter. What's the point? It just seemed like she was having a hard time standing. Do you feel, as someone who's been around this sport, do you feel like that's something that should be done more? And in particular, if you were in her corner, would you have suggested to stop the fight?
No. You know, she's a warrior. Let her go out on her shield, you know. I really respect her for that. You know, I know she was in obvious pain, but she was still fighting as hard as she could, saying she was fine, which was a lie, but I would do the same exact thing.
Really?
On O'Malley's fight when he, like, couldn't stand up, but he still, like, fought as hard as he could on the ground. Like, that's, you know, this is a sport, but it's also a battle. So I really respect her for that.
Even if she had a partial tear and then it became a full tear because she kept fighting, she could have reduced her time off.
You got to win anyway.
Like, yeah.
Just whatever happens in there, you just have to win anyway. You're hurt, you're tired, you're broken. You just, that's the way it goes. You know, there's an L or a W on your record. Like, you have to win anyway.
When you found out that it was a full tear and she's going to need surgery and be out for 9 or so months, what did you feel?
I felt like, man, that's a shame for her, but that's the game, you know, actually. Just, yeah, it's too bad. So I wish her a speedy recovery. That's all.
You corrected me last week. I think you said that there should be, I think, 4 more fights on your record. So that was your 54th pro fight, if my math is correct.
45th.
Except, yeah, I got the numbers mixed up there. 45th. Would you say that was one of your best performances, one of your best ones, maybe even in the UFC? Was that your best one in the UFC?
Man, it's hard to say. That's what my coaches are telling me.
So okay.
I'll just try. I mean, I had a pretty great throwdown with Nico. I had a great performance against Barb. I mean, I don't know. So what do you think?
I mean, I think considering the stakes, considering, you know, the stage, considering what she had done going into that fight, I think it was.
Oh, I do want to say something. I really felt like I reached a new level with my striking. Like, I often feel very stiff and stuff in there and kind of jerky, but I really felt more fluid and, like, I had my feet under me and balanced and I felt like I leveled up for sure. So I'm excited about that.
Who's responsible for that?
John, my head coach is my head coach, John Wood. Also my other striking coach, AJ Matthews. I'm working a lot with both of them. So thanks to them. And also Lorenzo, my strength conditioning coach, he's been having me do a lot of ins and outs and pushing off hard. So I felt like when I was pushing off, you know, with my feet, I had a lot of distance and I'm getting stronger. So thanks, guys.
I remember when we spoke at the Tough finale after your first stint in the UFC, and I think off the top of my head, I think the date was November 30th of maybe 2013. I'm just doing this off the top of my head. I'm a little weird like that, Roxy. But I remember talking to you afterwards, and you were disappointed, but you were also like, you know, you were happy that you got finally in the UFC, right? And of course, you took some time outside of the UFC, you came back, and now you're doing what you're doing now. Are you exceeding your own expectations? Like, did you not think that at some point were you like, okay, this is just my story and maybe it won't involve, I will have done a lot of great things, but maybe it won't involve some wins and a nice run in the UFC. Is this, in a weird way, almost surprising you as well?
I don't know if I really had expectations other than my opponents making weight, which didn't happen twice.
Right.
That really sucked. I'm just, you know, of course I have my goals and I'm still working towards them, but I'm able to look back and be proud of myself for what I've accomplished.
Does it kind of make you laugh that after all these years, people still do almost judge your book by its cover, still don't give you the respect that you deserve?
It's funny. I like reading the underground and Reddit and comments and forums and stuff, and you know, a lot of people are still like, oh, she's so weak and athletic and she sucks, blah blah blah, but then, you know, a lot of people are, you know, giving me credit for my growth and saying that I look better and
right,
you know, like more strong, and it's, I don't know, so I guess it just depends, but I'm just focusing on myself and I'm pleased.
You told us last week that your coach from Japan was in attendance or was going to be in attendance. What did he say to you afterwards, after that fight on that kind of stage?
It was cool. I'm so happy that he was there, Kunioku-san. Yeah, he got to go, and he was saying that I inspired him. And
wow,
that everything we've done in the past, yeah, actually, he did, it made me feel really good. He said everything that happened in the past led up to this moment. You know, because he was with me when I was winning, and then when I went on my losing streak, you know, he cornered me in London and Okinawa, like all over the place. So he was there, and he saw all that. And he said, like, nothing that you did, Roxanne, was wasted. Everything added up to this moment where I got to see you on this big stage having this win, and I'm so proud of you. That was really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think that newer fans might not even know. Not that long ago, you were on a 6-fight losing streak. I mean, you could have quit. You could have walked away. You could have said, I'm done. And to see you doing this now is truly an amazing story. Now, how do you build off of this, right? Because you've had in the UFC, like, a win and then a loss, a win. How do you go on a streak now? What do you need to do to actually string a few together?
Just going to keep training every day, improving everything. You know, my jiu-jitsu, my wrestling, my striking, my elbows. I have awesome coaches. Just keep getting stronger. And hopefully my opponents will make weight. Because I really haven't lost to anyone who's made weight in the past several years, right?
Right.
So I'm just excited. I'm not afraid of anybody in the flyweight division. You know, bring them on. I'll take your veterans. I'll take your up-and-comers. I'll take anybody.
Yeah, and I don't know.
I'm not the best in the world, but I'm a hard worker, so you know, I'll get the job done.
Amen.
Together.
I think I saw you at the official weigh-in. You stuck around to see if she would make weight, but I think she was the second to last person to show up. Were you getting nervous?
I was getting nervous. I really wanted to go eat, but I was like, man, I really want to watch, make sure she makes weight. So then my friend's like, oh, there she is. So I went over with the fans in the fan section, and then when she made weight, we all cheered. I don't know if you hear my voice.
Yeah, I think I saw you off to the side. Was it different fighting on a Conor card? Like, did you feel like the spotlight was greater? Did you feel like it was more intense?
I'm not sure. It was really cool to have the spot that I had. It was the last fight on the ESPN card, so that was pretty cool. And I was very honored. Like, in media day, there was a long line of reporters to talk to me. I was like, oh, that's so cool. I was excited about that. So, yeah, I guess there was more hype and more media. Even though I know some of it was from her, but that's cool.
And I'm not well versed in this stuff. Can you explain what you were wearing, the inspiration behind it, the hair and all that? What is that from? Is that Dragon Ball Z?
I'm not sure how much detail I should go into.
Oh.
But you know, the hairstyle represents my power level.
Okay.
And the M represents, like, a more aggressive, like, killer instinct kind of thing. And I had this plan where I would, like, it was a sticker, right? So I would have it in my hand, and I would, like, power up, and I would, like, put my hand on my face, and then it would be on my face, and I'd show my power up, my killer instinct. And then I actually dropped the sticker. I was like, ah! So I was trying to, like, like make it still seem cool, and I stuck it on my head. It was a little crooked, but it still looked cool, and I still, you know, was able to show my force and my power level. And those of you out there know what I'm talking about.
Wow. So you can't really tell us the full story? Is this like an insider thing?
Yeah, kind
of. Whoa. I feel like on the outside of an inside joke here. Not a joke, but you know, like a thing. I'm like, I'm not cool enough. But is it from a show? Wow. Why so secretive?
Because Reebok.
Oh, but you were wearing it. Really? Okay.
Yeah, so.
All right. Well, I don't want to get you in trouble. We'll leave it at that.
Thank you.
All right, I'm sorry. I just wanted to know. I was curious. I wanted to be to cool. By the way, they announced this morning that the viewership on the prelims peaked for your fight. 1.9 million viewers were watching that fight.
Cool.
That's pretty amazing.
That's awesome. How exciting.
Yeah. Isn't that incredible? Everything's going to change for you now. You're a superstar.
Do you know how many fans sent me pictures of their betting tickets that they won like hundreds of dollars on my fight?
Wow.
What can I say except you're welcome?
Oh my gosh, you're the best. Did you say anything to Macy afterwards?
Yeah, I said, I'm sorry. Actually, during the fight, I accidentally, I don't talk to people during the fight, but when she went down, I accidentally said, I'm sorry, but it was more like, I have to keep beating you now. I hated that her leg was injured, and she said, no, it's okay. It's part of the game. And then we kept punching each other. After the fight, I said, you know, you will be a champion someday.
Wow.
I believe that. She's talented. She's a hard worker. I feel bad she got injured, but, you know, I did win the fight.
You really did feel bad. Like, in the middle of the fight, you're feeling bad about the state of her leg.
Yeah.
Damn. That's amazing. It really is. And how did you feel about her taking the microphone before you got to speak?
Mixed feelings. So she, you know, she said it was an honor to fight me, and that was cool. And then she said she wasn't embarrassed about her performance because it made me shine or something. And I was like, did she just diss me, or was she just young and didn't know how to come out?
Right.
I'll give her the benefit of the doubt. So I don't know. I was kind of like, whatever. I mean, I won the fight, and I believe that, you know, even if she hadn't injured her leg, I still would have taken the fight. I was beating her in the first round anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I think the intentions were good, but I feel like in that moment, the winner should speak first.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, best of luck to her, but yeah.
She's young.
She's young.
Yeah. How quickly do you want to return?
Yeah, I always want to fight sooner. So, you know, whenever the UFC deems it good for me to come in, like, please give me a call again. I'll be ready. I'm uninjured. Just my nose is a little swollen. I feel good, though.
Who do we want? New Roxy? She calls people out. She talks smack. Venom, vitriol. Who do we want?
Anybody who will make weight. Line them up. I'll take them down.
Okay. It doesn't matter. Just make weight.
My elbows are waiting for you.
Roxy, congratulations. So great. And of course, we have to fan us off here with the Happy Warrior signed. I mean, this thing is going to be worth a lot of money one day when you go into the UFC Hall of Fame for all the great things that you are about to do. I am so proud to have this. So congratulations. Great to have you on last week and this week. How about this? Back-to-back appearances for you, Roxy. This is amazing. Congratulations and enjoy the victory. There she is, Roxanne Modafferi, giving us the thumbs up. Corporate Jake, I can hear you. You got me nervous there. I thought that was for the world. Great win for her. Some factoids, if you want some. 24-17, now 3-4 in the UFC. This courtesy of my good pal Andrew Davis of SIG, Stats and Info Group here at ESPN. She closed at a +550, according to the Caesars Sportsbook, the second largest underdog to cash in the UFC since 2018. Kama Worthy was a +650 when he defeated Devontae Smith at UFC 241, scored the first knockdown against Macy Barber, outlanded Barber in total strikes 112-25, according to UFC stats, and 10 ground passes against Barber, one of four women, to have 10 plus ground passes in a fight. Tatiana Suarez did it twice, Felice Herrig and Rose Namajunas. The fight with Barber was the second largest age gap for a women's fight in UFC history. 5,716 days between them. Macy Barber was just 5 years old when Roxanne Modafferi made her MMA debut, an absolute legend of the game, and nice to see her get that victory. All right, so that's one story that transpired Saturday night, and amazing that all those people were watching Roxanne Modafferi do that. I spoke actually briefly to Macy Barber and her father yesterday on the phone. She appeared to be down, but trying to remain positive. She, the first thing that she said was, "Well, maybe now my prediction of being the youngest champion in UFC history might not come true." I told her that a wise man once said, "The best laid plans of mice and men often go awry, and this is just the way the career goes." But at the end of the day, 21 years young and having the start to her UFC career that she had, pretty darn impressive. And so losing to someone like Roxanne is nothing to hang your head down about, and she'll be able to return. Now, the layoff is obviously, the biggest bummer. The loss would just be the loss, and that would be disappointing in its own right. But now having to go under the knife, they haven't decided yet, by the way, where they will do the surgery. And they're being told around 9 months or so of recovery. But I do believe that the fight should have been stopped, not so much by the doctor. And I don't know. I'm not a doctor, by the way. I don't know how you can tell if it's a partial tear or a full tear. Like, how do you determine that? I really have no idea. How do they actually know? Can doctors actually tell without doing an MRI? I don't know. But I will just say, if I were her corner, and she has a very, very experienced and respected corner, Duke Rufus, Ben Askren, to name a couple, I would have just stopped the fight going into the third. And I know she's tough, and I respect the fact that they have that opinion. I feel like I can have my opinion as well. Live to fight another day. What if it was a partial tear, and then it went to a full tear? What if that happened? Right? It just made things worse. It did not look like she was going to be able to turn things around. And there's a case we made that if you kept the fight standing, like I thought it was really smart for Roxanne to take the fight to the ground, because if she was standing essentially on one leg, you can still land a haymaker. If you're on the ground, it's very hard to use your leg, which you need leverage to get out of the scrambles, to try to get back on your feet, to shrimp, all that stuff. It's very tough. And so to take the fight to the ground, I actually thought was a brilliant move on Roxanne's part. I saw some people saying she should have kept the fight standing. And we've seen people with injured legs, score some pretty big haymakers. So that made sense. I'm just saying, if I were her corner, I would have just said, let's just live to fight another day. Let's just move on at this point. You're clearly injured. You're in a lot of pain. And I have so much respect for her toughness, her heart, her desire, all that stuff to keep on going was amazing. But was there any point? 21 years young. You got a whole career ahead of you. Just live to fight another day. That's what I would do. I know that's not part of the culture in our sport. For whatever reason, I think it's more a part of the culture in boxing. One of my theories is the show win pay structure. If you know how much you're going to make going in, and it's the full amount up front, you don't have to worry as a cornerman. You don't have to worry about taking half of the purse away. I 100% think that comes into play, and I've asked coaches if that comes into play. You don't want your fighter to come back and say, "You robbed me of 50% of my pay." It's an awkward thing to think about. That's not as prevalent. That model isn't as prevalent in boxing. Now, I'm not saying that's 100% why they didn't make that decision, but I do think that it is something that comes to mind when, the fight is playing out. I just feel like it was very clear that she was not going to be able to rebound. So why not? Why not just live to fight another day? Anyhow, that's the story. She'll rebound. Roxanne wins. Everyone was very happy for her, and I'm sure all the people who placed a bet on her were extremely happy for her. And so now we'll see when Macy returns and who Roxanne gets matched up with next. In a matter of moments, we're going to be joined by Kevin Lee, the lone 246-related guest on this show. Last week, it was announced that he'll be headlining the March 14th Brasilia card against Charles Oliveira, which is a great fight. But if I'm being honest, I'm a little disappointed it's not Islam Makhachev next. So let's ask him about that. If you want to know how Kevin Lee fits into all of this, let's ask him right now. Kevin, how are you?
What's going on, Ariel? I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I have an issue with you, Kevin. I have a bone to pick with you.
go ahead, that I'm not on Skype? Hey, that's on your people.
No, it's not about the Skype. It's not about the Skype. I have an issue with you that...
Oh, okay, because I'm set up. I'm set up. I just want you to know that.
No, it's all good, my man. I know these things happen. I'm just happy to have you on the show. Here's my issue. My issue is, why aren't we fighting Islam Makhachev? You seem to want it. He seemed to want it. Why isn't this happening? This is like the one fight in UFC history where I feel like both of you guys continue to say you want it, yet it doesn't happen for some reason.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I sat down there with them for over 9 hours trying to convince them to give me that fight. For some reason, the UFC, you know what? I mean, they just don't like to fight. That's kind of what it came down to. I mean, all the fans are with it. You know, he's with it. I'm with it. For some reason, the UFC, they just don't like to fight. They think he's not a big enough name. He don't draw enough, and they want me in bigger fights. So I told him, I'll only take this Charles Oliveira fight if I get Islam next, and we're trying to make that happen in June in Russia. So to me, when they kind of pitched the Russia idea, me and Islam headlining that one, it kind of made me, okay, I'll back off from them, and I'll go ahead and get this money from Charles first.
But do they give you a reason why they don't want this?
They want him to have some more experience. That's what they flat out said. And to me, it's they don't want to see me win, Ariel. I mean, let's be honest here. It pretty much came straight out of Sean Shelby's mouth that they don't want to see me do that to him. They don't want to see me win, so they want to kind of stack the chips against me. But it's always been a way in my career. So I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna make this fight happen. And then afterwards, I made sure that we put it into the contract that I get Islam next, and I want Islam, and I want him in Russia. And I want a headline against his people, and then we'll really see what's happening.
Wow! So you put that in writing?
It's not. Look, the bout ain't even signed yet, you know. So they need to go ahead and get that handled, because I'm looking at getting this done like the next day or two. But yeah, I want it in writing.
Okay.
I don't want just no more talking, no more. You know, they trying to keep them away from me, so I want it in writing, and I want it to be done. And when I sign it, then I'm signing up for two bouts, really. I'm signing up for this one in Brazil against Charles, and I'm signing up for Islam in Russia.
How do you feel about going to Brazil to fight a Brazilian?
It is what it is, you know. Like, it ain't gonna be fun, but I'm gonna make sure I get it done. Charles is somebody he's in his prime of his career, and he's looking for a big come up too. So I'm gonna make sure I'm not that one for him. I'm the one that got to take fights like this. You know, I don't get to fight, you know, I don't get to fight Cowboy coming off two losses and is looking a little chinny. I got to fight the guy that's coming up in his prime with a whole lot of experience behind him, fought a whole lot of big names. And I got to take him in his hometown in like the most hostile crowd that there is in the world. So I'm going to go ahead and do this and show again why I'm the man that, you know, really don't give a fuck.
Okay, so wait, are you saying that from that comment there, are you saying you weren't all that impressed with Conor's win on Saturday?
I mean, I ain't been impressed with nothing in the UFC for a minute, to be honest with you. It's starting to get a little whack to me, like most of these guys. And Conor's up there with it. I mean, it was a good little, you know, he got the job done. He got the money. But to me, like, he fought a guy that was tailor-picked for him. He handpicked for him and, you know, was chinny. You know, anytime you go down off a shoulder strike, you know, and it really sting you. And this ain't even like to slant Cowboy. I'm not one of them people that think Cowboy laid down. But, if you're going down off, if a shoulder is hurting you, that means your chin is gone. And they already knew that. So, you know, I'm not impressed. I'm a little irritated by it, to be honest with you, when I got to go to the grocery store yesterday and hear people talk about, you know, oh, he did that to Cowboy, oh, he's back, blah, blah, blah. Like, man, come on. Like, we really out here really fighting. To me, I'm really fighting. You know, I came back, I had my comeback fight in November, and I took on an undefeated guy. I didn't take on somebody that was, you know, way over, a little over the hill. So, you know, yeah, I'm a little irritated by it, to be honest with you.
You feel like he's getting too much props for this?
Yeah, I mean, it ain't necessarily his fault, so I ain't gonna really blame it on that. You know, he didn't really celebrate too much, because you can't celebrate that type of win. How could you? Like, you know what it is. We all know what it is. The general public, like, they might get kind of swayed by these type of things, but But to be honest, like, if you're a real competitor, like, you know what it is. So, yeah.
But there is something to be said for maybe, you know, getting your feet wet, getting back on track, getting a victory that, you know, not as a tune-up fight, but, you know, a name who maybe isn't a top contender, just to get the momentum back, right? Isn't that part of the fight game, too?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. But I just ain't realize we was doing that in the UFC. If we was, I didn't get the memo. Like, I don't get them. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't realize we was doing tune-up fights and, you know, all this little fake shit. And, you know, Jorge Masvidal is all of a sudden, he's the top guy. And I mean, he's doing, like, the fakest, wackest shit out here. All these dudes to me, like I said, I ain't been impressed with nobody for a minute. Maybe Israel Adesanya. He's the only one that been impressive. But you know, Khabib, whack. Tony Ferguson, fucking whack. Conor McGregor, fucking whack. Jorge, they all fucking whack to me. So, you know, I don't know. I'm on a different wavelength.
You're fired up. You're annoyed.
Yeah, I'm a little annoyed. I ain't gonna lie to you. But I'm gonna carry this all the way through the camp, and I'm gonna make sure that I take it out on Charles on March 14th. That's my only focus. Like, the rest of this shit, it can all come and go. That's my only focus.
You're saying you didn't like the Versace robe? Come on. I mean, that was fly.
Man, come on, man. Come on. I'm not about to do this. You know, the robe, the dressing up like Scarface, anytime we see the man. Like, he was like the main one to get shit like that for however long. And then, you know, the man waited 20 years until he finally get a little spotlight. And then this is what he doing with it. Like, come on, man. You ain't thought of nothing in 20 years besides the Versace robe. Conor did that shit two, three years ago to a trainer. Like, come on, man. That's what are we doing here?
Wow. Were you at the fight?
I digress. I didn't show up to that fight.
Why?
I ain't seen Conor fight live yet. I did a little something at the house with my people, and we, you know, we all sat down and we watched it. I'm not about to sit there and watch that. Especially with somebody like Cowboy, because I got respect for Cowboy, and I knew he was going to go down. So you know, I ain't about to do that.
You didn't want to validate
if it was
the
a
whole
real
thing.
Fight. If it was a real fight, if he would have fought, let's be real. He should have fought me, or he should have fought Justin Gaethje. That should have been the real fight, you know. Especially when you talk about trying to get a lightweight title back and really trying to compete against the best out there. Them should have been the one or the two fights, and they wasn't that. So to me, it was whack. And I wasn't really about to, you know, I watch it at home.
Was that even brought to your attention? Like, was this ever really a possible thing that you would be his return fight?
It was, but I already knew, like, it wasn't going to happen. You know, we already knew it wasn't going to happen. Like, it ain't even from his part. It's, you know, it's a business at the end of the day, and it's so much to it. They don't want to lose that cash cow. They don't want to do that yet. Not yet. It's going to happen, but not yet. And that's where my mind was at. I already knew that.
Well, the real crime of your career is, if, like, I mean, you have been calling these people up, from Conor to Khabib to Islam, and it seems like you never get any of these people. We need to try to fix this.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm going to keep doing what I got to do. I got to keep taking on the guy that's still on his come up. And I'm going to keep collecting win streaks. You know, Charles on one of the longest win streaks at lightweight. I'm going to go in and collect that one. Islam is on another huge win streak at lightweight, so I'm going to collect that one. The rest of these guys that's all sitting above me, they just want to sit there and they don't want to do shit. I tried to make Gaethje happen. I tried to make so many fights happen. Listen, it ain't even on me. I'm just being honest with you, Ariel. The UFC, they basically told me they don't want to see me win. They don't want to see me do it. So I got to do the hardest fights out there, and that's what I'm going to do until I really break through to some people and really show them again that I'm going to hold the title. So I don't give a fuck about none of this. As long as I keep doing what I got to do, I'm holding that title. They can talk about who they want to. They can X me out of however many conversations that they want to. That none of that shit gonna matter once I get the title. So that's where my head is at.
You know how you fix all of this? You get Bernie in the White House. He'll change everything for you.
We could do that.
That's your guy. That's one of the strangest unions that I've seen in quite some time.
Man, I'm making big moves, Ariel. Only bigger and better. You know, the UFC, they want some political pull. They got to holler at your boy. And listen, and when I actually do get up there, I'm not going to be one of these guys. Ain't nobody else make me. Ain't nobody, like, I ain't make my name off of nobody else. I made my name. And I feel like I'm one of the only self-made dudes that's going to be at the top. So, you know, when you talk about with Bernie and all that, like, I made that connection happen. I didn't have to go like Kobe and, you know, sit down with Dana and ask Dana, like, oh, please, can you please? No, that ain't how that's working. I'm doing this. So if the UFC want it and they want that political pull, once he do actually win, then holler at your boy. They know who to talk to.
Tremendous stuff, Kevin. Thank you very much. I look forward to this fight March 14th. I like the fire in you. This was a lot of fun. I appreciate you doing it.
All right, I'm about to go to the gym.
All right,
there you go.
Kevin Lee. That was amazing. Great stuff from the Motown phenom himself. All right. Last week, as I said, was a great week. It was a fun week. It was just such a great honor and pleasure to be working for ESPN all week long covering such a big event. I would say, the highlight of the week was, getting to spend some extended time with my old pal, Michael the Count Bisping, who, you know, likes to take shots at me from time to time, likes to go below the belt. But I always, you know, as a wise woman once said, when they aim low, you aim high. I always aim high when it comes to Michael Bisping. And I want to remind you that the best-selling book, Quitters Never Win, is out tomorrow everywhere here in America. It was out in the UK earlier last year, but everywhere in America. And I want to zero in on this little recommendation right over here on the front cover, right over there. It says, quote, one of the very best MMA books ever written. Ariel Helwani, mixed martial arts reporter for ESPN. What do you think, Mike? What do you think?
I mean, listen, that for me was the highlight of my career. Never mind being in the Hall of Fame at one point, the most wins. The fact that the great Ariel Helwani, I mean, people talk about as your nose, but truly, that is nothing compared to the ego on this man. And for you to be on the front cover of my book, I mean, it was just the best endorsement that money could ever buy.
True or false, you had no idea before I told you that I was on the front cover, that I was actually on the front cover, and deep down inside, you actually thought, you know what? Who approved this? I don't want this guy on the cover of my book.
Yeah, I was like,
I could tell.
Trying to sell copies of this book, not put people off. I'm like, come on. No, thank you, Ariel. Thank you for the kind words. I appreciate it. As you said, Quitters Never Win came out earlier in the year in the United Kingdom. Did very well. Got on the Sunday Times bestseller list. And then now tomorrow it releases in the United States. Obviously, we've changed a lot of things. The publishers wanted to take out all the British terms that maybe the Americans might not know. But it's a terrific book. The feedback that I got from it was very, very good. So if you want a copy and you want a signed copy as well, go to MikeBispingBook.com. I'll be doing a live signing over Facebook Live or something like that. So MikeBispingBook.com. Get your copy, get it signed. There you go.
Wonderful. Now, we spent the week together, and the unfortunate part for me was I was with you all week, but then when the fight was over, I didn't see you anymore. I didn't get your thoughts on anything. I didn't know what you were thinking, what you were feeling afterwards. So can you tell me, you saw Conor do what he did, 40 seconds, shoulder strikes, all that stuff. How do you feel about this performance out of Conor McGregor?
Hey, listen, he did what he needed to do, and he did it in style. You know, you can't hate on him. You know, I mean, Cerrone, I think when he watches that back, you know, he's not going to be overly proud of that performance. But Cerrone was in a tough spot, obviously coming back off two stoppages, a nasty knockout against Gaethje, and then getting TKO'd against Ferguson. Mentally, that's very hard. So that was always a tough problem for him. But McGregor went out there. He looked electric, did, you know, got it done in style. You know what I mean? So well done to him. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the next fight will be.
We just spoke to Kevin Lee, who said that he wasn't impressed by the shoulder strikes. He thought the only indication that came out of that was Cowboy has no chin. Shoulder strikes should not hurt you the way they did. Is that an accurate statement?
Well, I never said that, but you're asking me if I agree with Kevin.
Yes.
No, yeah. I agree. You can shoulder barge me in the face all day long, and I will not feel a goddamn thing, okay? And I said this on the post-fight show. Shoulder strikes are an annoyance, okay? They're not a lethal blow, and I don't want to hear any crap about, oh, man, but he was training those, and the torque that he gets in his shoulder strikes are unlike any other shoulder strikes known to man. No, that is not the case. Shoulder strikes, when somebody does that, it's like, come on, can you stop fucking shouldering me in the face because it doesn't hurt. It's like when they stamp on your toe or like they give a little hammer fist to the thigh, to the thigh. So, hey, listen, it was creative. It was inventive. And that's like all was available to McGregor in that moment. He did well. He did good.
Would you suggest, you know, you said something to me that I didn't really think of, but I thought you were spot on. For you, the narrative in your career throughout, you know, the entire run up until the very end was you were great. You're a future Hall of Famer, but you can never win the big one. And then you got to the Anderson fight, and that was almost like an unofficial title fight. People said, all right, this is the big one, main event, your, you know, home country, can you do it? And you did, and then look what happened afterwards. Do you feel now, I feel like all this did, in many respects, was reinforce the narrative that Cerrone can win the big one. I don't know if he's ever going to get another big one at this point in his career. Do you agree?
Yeah, certainly. You know, I mean, I don't think he's going to get... I mean, listen, everybody loves Donald Cerrone. He's a legend of the sport. And what he's done inside the octagon is legendary. It really is. But, you know, three stoppage losses in a row now. So I don't think he's going to get a fight anywhere near as big as what he had at the weekend. And the comparison you were making, as I said, same thing people used to say to me, good fighter, can't win the big one. So for when I fought Anderson Silva, I didn't know if I was ever going to get a title fight. So I looked at that as my title fight. It was against Anderson Silva, his legendary opponent in London, my nation's capital. So it was a big deal. So I left no stone unturned. I did everything I could to win that fight. And of course I won. That led to a title fight and then a great legendary run myself. So I think Donald, he could have done more. He could have done more, I think. But listen, it is what it is. There's two men in every fight, you know, and you react to what happens. He got kicked in the face. It was probably days from there. You know, what are you going
to
do?
And I'm not trying to compare the two of you, but worth noting, when you had that, you know, label placed on you, you weren't losing in a minute, right? Like, well, like his fight against RDA, yeah, another fight, you know, you were losing big ones, but you were going the distance or third round, second round, these very quick
distance,
finishes.
Ariel, distance, going the distance, buddy.
Yes, that's right. That's, well, you had a couple second round losses here and there, but I'm just saying, like, you were never losing in a minute, which is kind of shocking for a guy who's the winningest fighter in UFC history, but then losing in a minute. It's an amazing thing, but.
Yeah, well, listen, as I said, when you get knocked out twice in a row, it's hard.
Yeah.
You know, I talk about it in my book. When I lost to Dan Henderson at UFC 100, everybody knows what a bad knockout that was. And there's a lot of psychological demons to come back from that. And when I fought Dan Henderson in the rematch, yeah, I was cocky. Yeah, I was confident. And I truly was confident. But prior to that fight, because the fight was at 6 a.m. for the American audience, obviously it was in England, I was out trying to have a nap through the day. And all my team, they were out, you know, walking around Manchester, grabbing lunch, whatever. And I was trying to take a nap, but I couldn't sleep. Because the last time I stepped into that octagon with Dan Henderson, I got knocked out unconscious. And then the nerves and the anxiety started to creep in. Now, of course, when I got to the arena, that all kind of went out the window. But my point that I'm making is for Donald, he had two of those he got stopped and finished and embarrassed. So it's very, very hard. I mean, fighting is an incredibly physical sport, but it's mainly mental. That's the most important side. So Donald was lacking a little bit mentally Saturday night, but... You know, that's the sport. That's the way it goes.
You told me earlier in the week, you're not really buying this narrative that it's a new Conor, that he's a changed man, all this stuff. After seeing the way he reacted on Saturday and how gracious he was in victory with the grandmother and everything, do you feel like maybe there is hope that he will stay out of trouble? And no, you're smiling doesn't lead me to...
I'm smiling because, you know what I mean?
What?
I'm here to promote my book, maybe talk about my podcast, maybe to do all that. We're over to swing off Conor's nuts the whole time. Do you know what I mean? It's like, everyone's doing that. You've got his manager on here. You've got tons of people on. Do that. What you got for me, buddy?
Okay. I just wanted to know. I mean, you're half analyst, half author.
Bob Bless, he's making tons of money. He's going to fight Khabib or I tell you what's going to happen. I'll guarantee he fights Nate Diaz next. Khabib ain't going to fight anytime soon.
Why?
Masvidal and Usman, they're probably going to fight each other. Khabib's going to fight Tony in April. Then it's Ramadan. If he beats Tony, he's not going to fight anytime soon. And Conor already teased Diaz, and that's good business for everybody involved. Fans want to see it. Everyone makes money. So there you go.
Okay.
That's what's going to happen.
That's
my prediction.
Thank you. You just laid it out for us. Now, the last time I had you on, you revealed a story in your book that people didn't know. You gave us a little taste of something. I don't want you to give everything away. You want people to ultimately buy this book. But is there another story? What's that?
I said fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Yes. Well, it seemed to work out in the UK. Is there another story that maybe we don't know about you that you can tell us a little bit about to get us to buy the book? I mean, I've read the book already, but, you know, for the people who haven't.
What was the first one I told you about? Unfortunately, when I had trouble with the law.
Yes, that was the one.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, listen, I grew up to be a cage fighter. I grew up to be somebody that steps into a cage naked and fights people. It stands to reason that maybe when I was a kid, I had a couple of beers and got into a couple of bar fights, and more than a couple, unfortunately. But I turned it all around. A story. I mean, there's so many stories in there. There's lots of anecdotes. And I had to put in a few extra ones as well for the American version. They wanted more stuff like that. So,
what do you mean stuff like that? They wanted more of Michael getting in trouble?
No, they wanted a few extra stories, a few extra anecdotes. You know what I mean? They just to beef it up a little bit, to really separate the American edition from the UK edition. You know what I mean? So, you know, they wanted some more acting stuff. So when I was down in Cape Town, South Africa, everyone's heard this story. I was filming the show Warrior earlier this year, and some guys tried to mug me and pulled guns out and stuck them in my face and tried to force me into a car. So I go into the story detail about that. In fact, I was just doing another interview and they got this out of me. So I'll share this. When I fought Luke Rockhold the second time, it was a rematch, obviously, of a fight that I lost in Australia. And prior to going out to Australia for the fight, I was sparring, my last week of sparring, and I got headbutted. And that opened up a cut right on the eyelid of my good eye. Right? Oh. And obviously everybody knows I have a bad eye that, you know, doesn't function particularly. But that was obviously, I had to keep that under wraps that the problem was so bad. So I'm in Australia, but my good eye has stitches in it. So as I'm walking into the arena to fight, the commission runner says, Michael, the doctor needs to see you right now. And I'm like, why does the doctor want to see me? He said, your eye. You need to look at your eye. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to get pulled from the fight. And anyway, they come and look at me. They're talking about my good eye. Oh. He's got stitches in it. I'm like, holy shit. And they say, yeah, Mike, we can't let you fight with stitches in. We've got to take the stitches out right now. So I say, okay, no problem. They take the stitches out. The fight starts and Rockhold headbutts me. Oh. Right? And he knew there were stitches in that eye because he saw them. He mentioned them when we squared up. So he'd give me a little headbutt and it opens up the cut above my good eye. And I'm trying to fight. And blood is just pouring into my eye. So I wipe the blood away. But it's like if you take, you know, a tub of paint and you pour it on a windscreen, the windshield wipers, you know, they'll do that and it'll just smear everywhere. So I'm wiping the blood, but it's just smeared and I'm looking and all I can see is red. I can see like the shadow of Rockhold and then like I kind of, you know, wipe it and I'm looking and I'm trying to fight, but then the blood runs into my eye again and I'm wiping it and all I can see is red and then, boom, I get hit with a head kick, whatever. I had no idea what happened. So anyway, I was pissed off about that, but I couldn't really say what happened because I didn't want to draw attention to my eye. So that's why when I was filming that movie in Toronto and I found out through yourself, Ariel, you text me that the Chris Weidman was out the fight. That's why even though the fight was on 2 weeks' notice, I wanted to fight Rockhold again because I knew I could beat him. And I knew this time I'm not going to have stitches in my eye that he's going to be able to take advantage of. So that's why I took that fight on 2 weeks' notice. And we know what happened after that.
You're welcome,
so there you go.
By the way, for that,
for
changing your life, calling you up, letting you know about that. Don't mention it. Don't mention
it,
please.
How Hell Wanted changed my life.
Please.
I owe it all to you.
Please, too much. Now, I actually felt a little bad because when I was working with you, I think in June, you actually took out the fake eye. And I was like, holy smack. You like did it right in front of me. I didn't realize it was like that. But then you did it on your podcast and everyone was talking about it. And I felt like, wow, I saw this first. And I felt like, you know, maybe I should have asked you about it. And you know, I kind of blew that one. So does that one just not work at all?
No, not really. I have a fake eye that's made of plastic that's colored, so you can't see through that. And the only reason I pulled that eye out the way I did was because Luis J. Gomez, who I do my podcast with, believe you me, check it out if you want to laugh. He started wearing glasses and we're doing the show and he's wearing shades indoors. And I'm like, what the hell, Luis? Who do you think you are? You've got all Hollywood. Why are you wearing shades? And then he brought up His producers, they brought up, you know, pictures of me at press conferences and stuff wearing sunglasses indoors. And I'm like, yeah, I know that. But here's why I used to wear sunglasses, because my eye was a mess. And all people are going to do is talk to me about my eye and it looked cross-eyed and it looked dark and all this type of stuff. So I would wear the sunglasses to block that out. So I said, here's why I was wearing shades, you prick. Not because I think I'm Hollywood. It's because I'm trying to hide my eye. So that's how that happened.
Would it be rude if I ask you to see it?
I can look into my eye, Ariel. I'm not a little circus freak show, buddy. You know what I mean? I'm not going to do it. It's one and done. As I say, there was mitigating circumstances, but if you want to know more about it, it's in the book. Check it out. But yeah, there you go.
Okay. So it comes out tomorrow. MikeBispingBook.com. Isn't it true that if you actually go on the website, you'll call someone if they buy it?
So I'm trying to understand this from the publishers. They've arranged this. It's called a live signing. So obviously with the wonders of social media and technology these days, if you go to MikeBispingBook.com and you buy a book, you can also leave a message on there for the personalized message that you want inside
Okay.
it. And then I'll sign them live on Facebook and Instagram. Someone will hand me the book. They'll give me the message. I'll sign that. And there's also a chance to speak to me on the phone if anyone wants to do that. But Jesus Christ. There you go. MikeBispingBook.com if you want a signed copy. If you don't want one, fair enough. And if you don't want a book, fair enough. But if you do want one and you want it signed, there you go.
It is a phenomenal book, all jokes aside. And what makes it so great is that the great Ann Evans was behind it all. He is the brains behind this book. One of my dear friends, there it is. Quitters Never Win, Michael Bisping, My Life in UFC. Before I let you go, very quick question. Tell me more about Conor McGregor. Can we talk about just, you know, your relationship with him? And
hey, I'll tell you what. I mean, the man is excitement each and every time. You know, listen, love him or hate him, everybody watches, and it's simple as that. And that's what he's trying to do. That's what he's doing. That's what you got to do at a fight. You got to evoke emotion out of the audience, out of the public. I always said if I ever walked into an arena to fight and I got like a little polite golf clap, you're failing. You know, you want passion, you want excitement. And that's what he brings. And he certainly delivers every time he fights as well. He's, you know, the most exciting guy in the UFC for a reason.
Michael, I love you. Lovely to work with you. Lovely to see your son, Callum, the great Callum Bisping, who's going to be a superstar wrestler at the University of San Francisco and perhaps one day represent Great Britain in the Olympics. Wouldn't that be cool? So great to see you guys and hang out with you guys in Vegas.
Appreciate that, Ariel. Yeah, he's actually flying out to Austria for his first tournament representing Great Britain. I think it's 202 pounds is the weight limit, so he'll be out in Austria. And yeah, you never know. Maybe in the Olympics one day. Thank you, Ariel.
Thank you.
I appreciate it, buddy. And as you say, always great working with you, my friend.
Yes, sir. And check out the book. Truly, MikeBispingBook.com comes out tomorrow. It's a phenomenal read. I really do mean that. Quitters Never Win is the book. Thank you very much to Michael Bisping and Ant Evans, who did a phenomenal job putting the book together for making this happen. All right, let's go back to 246 Talk, one of the big stories. Of course, kicking off the main card, Anthony Pettis, former lightweight champion, moving down from 170, going up against Diego Fajeda. And another great win, six in a row now in the UFC for Diego Fajeda. He is the first man to actually submit Anthony Pettis. He had the body triangle. You remember that fight with Dustin Poirier, but it was more due to the injury. So this is an actual submission tap. Huge win for Diego Fajeda. He joins us now for the first time on the program. Is he there? There he is. Diego, how are you, my friend? Congratulations on the win.
Hey, Ariel. Good. Thank you. Appreciate it. No, thank you.
You've been in the UFC since 2014. However, and that's, you know, 6 years now, but now you're getting this attention. Now you're getting this spotlight. You've won six in a row, getting the opportunity to fight on the Conor card. How is this all feeling for you after being in the UFC for so long and kind of flying under the radar for a long time?
It's feeling great. You know, it's so important for me. It took a bit of a while to get what I wanted, but, I'm here now, and I'm enjoying the whole time. I'm on the top right now, and then it was a great fight. You know, Anthony Pettis put a great fight, and I'm so excited and so happy to go on my way, and it was great.
One thing that surprised me when I read it, and then I confirmed it by looking at your resume, your record, that was your first submission win since your debut against Colton Smith in 2014. You're, I believe, a third-degree black belt. How is this possible? How are you not getting more submission victories?
I don't know. I think people want to test my stand-up skills a little bit, the boxing, and I'm doing pretty good. I think like learning a lot with my coach and putting a lot of time, and I'm really putting effort there too, and I'm excited to get a submission now.
Are you able to see that graphic right over there? Tied for the third longest winning streak in the lightweight division. The other two, Ferguson, Khabib. What's it like to see your name among those guys?
Oh, this is great. It's so impressed because then Khabib and Tony Ferguson is he's really close by each other, and then it's impressed. You know, I never thought it's gonna be so having so much impact like that, but it's good to see my name on top of so many like celebrities like those guys.
Were you aware that no one had tapped Anthony Pettis yet going into this fight?
No, not really. I was having my game plan. I was not even thinking about what can happen or cannot happen. I just put my game plan and I succeeded to do it. But I never thought of myself like he never got submitted on the UFC.
I'm going to make a guess here. Was taking him to the ground part of your game plan? Because you landed 3 takedowns against Anthony, and in your 9 previous fights combined, you landed 3 takedowns. You landed 3 takedowns in this fight alone. Previously, 9 fights combined, 3 takedowns. So was the game plan to try to expose him on the ground?
Was to do more my wrestling. No, I've been working a lot of my wrestling, but this time I tried the hardest to go to the ground. Normally I don't do as much. I like to do a lot of transition. I like to the scramble, but like the way I say it, I've been put a lot of effort on my takedowns and my wrestling, and I got it. You know, 3 takedowns in one fight is a lot for me.
Going into this fight, you were not ranked, and it's amazing when you look at, you know, the names that you're on that graphic with, Khabib, Ferguson, you're still not ranked. Does that annoy you? Does that bother you? I have a feeling that will change this week, but does that bother you?
Nah, not really. I really don't care about that. I like to fight. I enjoy, you know, it's something I choose all along in my life, and, you know, just to have to fight for me is, you know, it's a big deal already. And then fighting a big promotion like UFC, I really don't care.
Of course, you're one of the stars coming out of the Fortis MMA gym, head coach Saif Saud, Dallas. You guys are doing so great. It seems like every card, another one is getting closer to being in title contention. When did you start training out of that gym?
I started training like right before Justin Poirier fight. You know, that's where our first fight, 2015.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2015. And, you know, we took a toll on that one. Like, it was my second loss by TKO. And I taught it myself, like, I need to improve. I need to get better. And on along my career, I was just having myself training, you know, like training myself, doing a lot of jiu-jitsu. That's when I told myself, like, you know, I'm just a jiu-jitsu fighter, try fighting MMA. I think I need to train MMA and I have a coach, a really great coach, like Coach Saif, and damn, it make the difference in my life. It make the hit the goal now. And, you know, the sky is the limit, and I'm impressed with that, and Coach been helping me a lot.
Yeah, since that fight against Dustin, where you got knocked out, you've won every single fight since. You've won 6 in a row, so clearly it is working. What was your confidence like after that? You know, you were undefeated, then you have those 2 losses. After the Poirier knockout, how are you feeling about your career?
After the Dustin Poirier, I thought my career was going, you know, real bad. You know, I fought 3 times on UFC. I won 2 and lost 2. I was like really getting sad, you know. But along the road, Coach Saif could, you know, getting my house team like put high, you know, and getting me excited for the next one. And for the next one, we really put a good show, and I trained hard as much as I could. And put the effort on my boxing and my Muay Thai and my wrestling, and really, he impressed me the way he coached me, and the connection I have with him right now, it's important for me, you know. It's to have a coach. I never have a coach before like that, and besides my jiu-jitsu coach, I was, you know, pretty good.
All right. So who do we want next? Who gets you closer to that? That title talk, right? Who gets you to that spot that you want to be in? Who makes sense?
I really don't think about fighting for the belt. that's not one thing like I'm not even thinking about it right now. I really want to. I enjoy to fight. You know, I enjoy. I don't care who I'm gonna fight next. You know, I really don't. But title shot, I don't think. I want to just get the rank. I want to make a big impact on the rank. You know, the top ranks and see from there. You know, I'm not gonna discuss. I'm not gonna take the possibility to fight for the belt. But my motivation is not the belt right now. My motivation is to really get my goals on the rank and put my like make my family proud of me, and the rest is come along the road.
Okay, maybe the winner of the Paul Felder Dan Hooker fight next month. Maybe that makes sense. Those guys are 6 and 7. Somewhere to get you a little closer.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And by the way, it was your birthday on Saturday. Happy birthday to you!
Oh yeah, my birthday. Thank you. 35 years old. You know. A great birthday, especially spending time in Vegas.
Yeah,
was great.
What did you do afterwards? Anything special?
No, I just got to the hotel. I spent time with my family, friends. We stayed there on the hotel, on the restaurant over there, and I ate. My little boy fell asleep, and we go back to the room.
Wow, a low key birthday, but those are the best kind of birthdays, right?
Yes, the best is a good memory. You know, it's a great memory, especially because I was with my family, and you know, my kids texting me, calling me the whole time, and proud of his dad, and make no more special than that. More special than that, it's amazing for me.
How old are your kids?
I have one 17 years old, and I have one in 10, and the other one 3.
Okay, wow, quite the range there, teenager to 3.
Yeah,
that's is the 17-year-old going to be a fighter?
He's in wrestling right now. He's planning to do. You know, I really don't know what he's dreaming, like his dream, like what his goals in life. But I think so. He really likes to do the wrestling tournament. He want to win a state this year, and he really. Putting his time, you know, and I hope so. But you know, I let him proceed his own trials.
Okay. Well, I look forward to seeing the next one, who they book you against, and where do you go from here? But 6 in a row in a stacked lightweight division, getting a win like that over a former champion like Anthony Pettis, I would think the best moment of your UFC career, right? Maybe your MMA career.
Yeah, for sure was. It was a super great moment for me, and then I really enjoyed the whole moment, and just to be there on a pay-per-view and on the big cards of the year, you know, I was happy. You know, it was great.
Diego, thank you very much for the time. Congratulations on the win.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, there he is, Diego Fajeda, joining us for the first time, I do believe, on this program. Like I said, 6 in a row, first fighter to submit Pettis in his MMA career, his first submission win since his UFC debut back in 2014 against Colton Smith. You see right over there, he's won 6, and that puts him tied for third as far as the longest active winning streaks in the lightweight division. Tony Ferguson, 12, Khabib, and then you got him tied with Islam Makhachev and Charles Oliveira. I thought Khabib had 12 as well. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I thought it was 12 versus 12. But in any event, that's a huge win for Diego Ferreira. And again, it seems like every weekend, another Fortis MMA fighter doing great things, taking a step, you know, further to title contention. They've yet to have someone fight for the belt or be necessarily in title contention. But we saw last month in Las Vegas, UFC 245, Jeff Neal take a nice step. You see Diego Ferreira. It just seems like very soon we're going to be talking about them, you know, in contention in multiple different weight classes. So congrats to the entire team and congrats to Diego Fajeda. In a minute, we're going to be joined by Holly Holm, who, of course, had that important victory over Raquel Pennington, rematch of her UFC debut back at UFC 184. Some of the fans were a little bit, okay, so Andrew Davis telling me that it's light. Okay, that's the difference, because one of the wins for Khabib was a catchweight fight, so He has won 12 in a row, but not in the lightweight division. Personally, I feel like it should, you know, why take away the victory? But I get the point. Active, lightweight, I get the point. Semantics. 12 versus 12, in my opinion. Holly Holm getting back on track after her first knockout loss of her MMA career. Had a knockout loss in boxing in 2011. It was interesting. She told me on Thursday at Media Day, after that knockout loss in boxing, a lot of people were calling for her to retire. And could you have imagined if she actually listened to those people and actually, you know, walked away from combat sports? All the things that she has done since then, pretty remarkable, 9 years later. And no one, I think, was necessarily calling for her to retire after the Nunes fight. I mean, Nunes considered arguably the best ever, so that's nothing to scoff at. But it was an interesting storyline going into Saturday. How would she respond? How would she rebound? How would she look in this rematch? Sometimes when a fighter is, you know, coming off a knockout loss, different kind of fighter, but she got the victory. And I don't think there was any question of that. Dana White afterwards was critical of the referee. Jason Herzog said that he should have, you know, broken them up a little bit, that there was too much clinching. But I did think it was interesting. At the post-fight press conference, he was critical of Jason Herzog, but then he said, I'm too old to be criticizing these guys. I need to stop with all of that. Which I thought was nice. You know, in the NBA and other sports, you can't criticize a referee, otherwise you get fined. Of course, this is a completely different structure, but I thought that was a nice little moment, that he's grown up a little bit. But sometimes the criticism is warranted. Like I thought the main event, went a little too long. I thought that went 10 seconds too long. I thought Nasrat took too many punches. And I understand there's a fine line between, you know, giving someone, a little more time to recover, giving them a chance to, you know, weather the storm and avoid, you know, being finished or avoid the damage. And we've seen people, escape those situations, but in those particular cases, and it's very easy for me sitting here on this side of the fence to be critical, but I thought those particular ones, were, especially the Cerrone one in particular, I thought he was done. I really did. Once he got to the ground, I thought he was done and wasn't doing much to defend himself and looked like he, you know, had enough. So anyway, that was some of the talk afterwards. But for now, let us say hello to Holly Holm, who joins us from a very familiar spot. She usually joins us from the car. And now here she is once again joining us from her car. Hello, Holly. How are you?
I really wasn't planning on being in my car.
No, I like this. This is your thing.
Here I am.
Thank you very much for joining us, Holly. I know after a fight, it's very hectic. So I appreciate the time. I know you were somewhat critical of yourself after the fight. Do you still feel that way 2 days later?
Yes. I mean, I always want to just be more devastating. You know, I want to let more go all the time, but I know that you can make a fight look really, really kind of scrappy and just kind of, you can make a dog fight out of things, and we were able to make it a clean fight, a clean win, so that's always a good thing. But I just wanted to do more in the position that I was in, and I just, you know, it leaves more for me to keep working on for next time.
A lot was made of the fact that this was just the 7th rematch in UFC history for you when you were in there. So much has happened since your last fight against her, UFC 184. Did it feel like deja vu? Did it feel like you were fighting the same fighter? A lot of her tendencies the same, or do you feel like she changed a lot?
I feel like it was a little bit different. I didn't feel like I was in the same fight, but I definitely felt, I felt like she was really waiting to counter a lot, and I still should have just let my punches go. I didn't ever feel threatened or in a bad position in the whole fight. And whenever I feel like that, it's like, well, you know, I should have been kind of just letting a little bit of everything go. I know in the last round I was kind of trying to break out of the clinch a little bit. I know we were in the clinch most of the fight. And, I mean, it's not really how I thought the fight would go, but it is what it is. And I know that it's no doubt, like, it's a clean victory, but I always want more, that's all.
I mentioned before you came on, at the post-fight press conference, Dana White was critical of the referee, Jason Herzog, saying he should have broken you guys up more. Do you agree with that statement?
I would have been fine with it either way. If he would have broken it up, you know, I just always take it on myself that I should have been the one kind of disengaging a little more and letting more strikes go. Being in a dominant position, I should have been more devastating in the dominant position. position. So, yeah, if you would have broken us up, I wouldn't have been upset about it, you know. I would have just kept fighting.
You guys were supposed to fight back in November, but you had to withdraw, I think, because of a knee injury, right?
It was my hamstring.
Hamstring.
I had torn the ligament, like 30% of my ligament that attaches my hamstring tore. And so there was just, and it was the last of the training. So I just needed to let that, all those fibers kind of regrow and heal. And my hamstring feels great. So even at the beginning of the camp, it was like, it was, I had checked with the doctors and it was 100% like healed as far as the new tissue and everything grown, but they were like, be careful because it's still fresh tissue and it needs a little time to get strong. So in the beginning of the training camp, I kind of took it a little bit easier on my hamstring. I did a lot of boxing and then slowly started with kicks and stuff like that. But by the time I got to the last week of training, it was, you know, I forgot about it because of how good it was doing. So.
And it's okay now, 2 days later?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's a little tight, but not bad.
You know, okay.
It's like, I can tell I used it. It's a little tight, but I mean, everything in my body is a little tight right now. So any kind of little, you know, kink you had, I feel really good. I don't have any injuries or anything. Like I said, it's just a little tight. That's all.
You also revealed in the post-fight press conference that your father has been dealing with some health issues. First off, how is he feeling now, and how much did that weigh on you going into this fight?
Well, you know what? I'm actually in his driveway right now. I just picked him up from the rehab facility. He got out today. And it was definitely a journey, you know. I kind of had felt that something maybe was going on, and I kind of talked to him Saturday night, and I thought, you know, let's get the blood work done. I feel like there might be something. And Sunday morning, I wasn't at church, but he was preaching, and the members of the church called me, and they just said, we think something's wrong, you know. And he, like, thought it was July, and just, like, a lot of signs of maybe a brain bleed. So I ran up to the church, and I rushed him into the emergency room, and sure enough, he had, it's a stroke, a type of stroke. It's called an intracerebral hemorrhage. And it's just like a really large bleed in his brain. And so he was in ICU for about 4 days, and in the hospital a total like 12 days. And that was Sunday before Christmas. And then right after the New Year, he got put into like a live-in rehabilitation where they just rehab everything, kind of get your everything moving again. And he's doing really, really well. It was pretty scary for a while there, but he's doing really well, and he's out now, and some of the big blessings that we have is he has no paralysis or anything like that, so there's huge blessings in this, but it's definitely been an interesting training camp, you know, but I think it's, I honestly feel like in this life, you can dig down and get energy where you need to, you know, there's a lot of nights that we didn't, my brother came in town, he lives in Arizona, and between him and I, you know, we didn't really leave my dad alone. We made sure that somebody was there, because when you're dealing with brain bleed, there's a lot of confusion, you know. We wanted to make sure that he had a familiar face there anytime that he would wake up. But there was some long nights there and scary days in the hospital, but like I said, he's doing really good, you know. There's those little hospital chairs I spent quite a few nights sleeping on those chairs and then, you know, going back to training in the morning. So it would be, I'd train at night sometimes late, and my team's so great that if I could make it to the gym at night, even if it was late, they would just show up, you know, and make sure that I could get my training in when I could. And I knew that my dad wouldn't want me to, you know, not pursue what I'm doing. That's why I kind of kept just kind of pursuing forward, and I knew that no matter what, if this was going to be something like permanent or something temporary or whatever it was, we were going to have to work together, learn how to move forward and live with it, whatever it is, you know? And so I just powered through it. And with the help of team and so many family members and friends and everybody that was so helpful during the time, it was actually really something to see how people really can pull together through times like that. So it was, like I said, there's some long nights hanging out in the hospital. Just go to the gym, and then I'd go to the hospital, stay the night, then go back in the morning to the gym. And my brother would kind of do more of the daytime stuff so that I could be at the training, and I would kind of do more of the nighttime stuff. So, you know, it's just nice to even have, you know, a lot of families sometimes don't really even function well together sometimes to five to times like that. And I'm just really thankful that I've you know, I've good brothers, and we just work together and made it through. And my dad doesn't remember a single day in the hospital.
Wow.
So, but he's, I mean, I'm telling you, like I said, I just picked him up this morning. He's doing great. And I just drove him up to his house. I literally just got here, and I let him, you know, go get all of his mail and everything. Kind of just, it's a good day. A real good day.
I'm sorry to interrupt that moment between you guys, because I'm sure he was very happy to see you. Did he know that you fought? Was he aware that you won?
Yeah, he actually, to be honest, the first couple weeks, I mean, he couldn't, which is typical of stroke, you know, they don't know from 1 minute to the next. I would go out, I would have lunch with him, and then I'd go back and bring dinner and be there for the night. You know, he wouldn't remember who was even there at lunch. And, but no, now he's, I knew the day was getting better when I walked in, because I said, okay, well, I got to go. He's like, oh, you got to go work out or something. I'm like, yeah, I got a fight coming up, you know. And about, I don't know, probably 4 days after he was in the rehab, I saw him every single day. And which, small blessings out there, little things that you just sit. The best rehab place here in Albuquerque is literally like a half mile away from the gym. And so I was able to just, you know, go have lunch with him, go back train, go have dinner with him, hang out with him in the evening, stuff like that, you know, when I was done. Sometimes I would train, go see him until he fell asleep, and I did majority of my runs after that. So I did a lot of my running, you know, like 11 p.m., just put my headlight on and go. And kind of a different training camp. You know, I did what I could when I needed to. I made sure it was all done, but sometimes it was at midnight. You know, it just kind of depended on the day. But I came in one night, and I walked in, and he goes, man, it's sure getting down to the wire. You got one last week of training, and it's go time. I think you're going to do real good. And he just, you know, kind of started talking. It was, like, really refreshing, you know. Obviously, a lot of people have a brain freeze. They say funny things. And of course, now we can laugh about.
Yes.
There's some funny things my dad, when we know, stick him in.
Is he going to make a full recovery?
Yeah, he's going to do great. His part of his brain that bled is where your speech is.
Oh.
So, you know, for a while there, he would like to say, but I'm telling you, like, I sat there, actually, before I left down, I sat there and had about a 4-hour conversation with him, and I left, and I was like, wow, not one weird thing came out of his mouth.
Wow.
You know? And he's not even out of rehab yet. So, I had a, and I gotta say, my dad has been, a lot of people ask me how he's been, because a lot of people with brain injuries, you know, they, I mean, super pleasant, super just kind of going with it. And after he really understood everything that was going on, he's like, well, you know, I'm just going to do what they say. I got to be in this rehab, and I'll do this, and we'll get back at it. And I'm telling you, he's doing so great. So he will make a full recovery. And, you know, going from scary nights there to that is just super, you know, big blessing. And, you know, one of the doctors was kind of telling me, like, you know, with the significance of his brain bleed, like, it's actually quite spectacular, like, how well he's doing. And so he's doing really, really good. You know, it's been, well, it will be a month, actually. The 22nd will be one full month. And for him to already be, you know, out functioning is really awesome.
I wish him the best. I know how I've had people in my family suffer strokes. I know how serious that could be, and I'm sure you had a bit of a heavy heart as you fought on Saturday, so it makes the performance that much more impressive. Last thing for you, Holly, and again, I appreciate the time very much. I know you better enough than to ask you who you want next, but I just want to ask, when do you want to return?
You know, I feel good. After a fight like Saturday, one thing about it, I mean, with a victory, it just makes it that, you know, you have this excitement, like, oh, I want to get back in there. And I have no injuries. You know, I feel good. I feel healthy. Right now, I'm just going to hang out with my dad. I don't know. Maybe I'll go on a little weekend vacation with my girlfriends and, you know, back at it. You know, I don't really, I love to train and I want to keep on this and, you know, I don't know. We'll see as soon as it happens. Excuse me. I was just eating a chocolate ball.
No problem. No problem.
I'm open to whatever, you know, I feel good. Like I said, I feel good and healthy. So, you know, whatever comes, I'd like to take advantage of whatever opportunity is available.
Congratulations. My best to your dad, my best to your family. Thank you for joining us, Holly, and looking forward to the next one.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
All right, there she is, the preacher's daughter herself, Holly Holm. Big win for her against Raquel Pennington on Saturday. And again, our best to her father. I remember how happy he was in Melbourne when she defeated Ronda Rousey. Great moment there. So looking forward to seeing him at a Holly Holm fight in the future as well. All right, another big story on the main card was Brian Kelleher getting a big win over Oday Osborne. They were supposed to fight on the early prelims, but then Grasso, Gadella got knocked off the card because Grasso missed weight, so they bumped him up all the way to the main card, and there he is, Long Island's own Brian Kelleher, who's giving me a little crap when I reached out to him. You gave me the who. Well, you're not feeling the love. Huh, Brian, you got beef with me?
No, you know what it is. It's like as soon as you win in this sport, you're loved again.
So yes, sir.
I feel the love coming back real quick, and it's all love, you know, just like the shirt right here.
That's right. You were very, and congratulations on a great win, a great victory, a great finish, and I know how much that meant to you. You were very open on social media. I was, you know, seeing you on Twitter leading up to the fight about how much this fight meant to you, and, you know, with the weight cut, you were very honest how it was, you know, not coming off as quick as you want. How much pressure did you feel, especially considering the fact that you were on that losing streak? Did you feel like you had to win to save your job?
Yeah, you know, in the back of my head, I was like, trying to tune out all those realities. I knew that I'm coming off two losses. My last performance wasn't great. And this was them trying to see, you know, do we want to bring in a new, you know, a new prospect, or is Kelleher still eligible to compete with the best guys? And so I had to prove that. And I was proud of myself, how I handled it all fight week. You know, I kept the calm about me. I kept confident, and I went out there and I executed.
When you got the okay, so I'll ask you about this because we just showed the photo. Why did you stand like that? Was that for Jorge Masvidal?
Yeah, a little shout out to Jorge. I don't know what it was. Like, I didn't even think about that, but I saw my opponent kind of plotting on me. Like, he had his knee down. He was going to do something crazy. And I was thinking in my head, like, two different things. I had my hands back, and I was going to do exactly what Jorge did, just run and do, like, a flying knee or a flying kick, something crazy out the gate. You know, I wanted to make the fight exciting, but last second I kind of was like, you know what, let's be smart here. This guy's gonna come out a little reckless, and you know, he's a newcomer, he's gonna want to make a statement. Let's be smart and let's be the veteran in there and get the job done.
When you got the call that you were going to be moved up to the main card, Conor McGregor main card, pretty darn close to his fight, what did that do to you?
Oh, it was amazing. You know, I, like I said, I tried to keep myself unfazed, but they told me, like, the night of weigh-ins, they came up to me out of nowhere last minute, like, hey, you're bumped up to the main card. Congratulations. I'm like, wait a second, what? Like, I was ready to wake up and just get in there and fight. But, you know, it couldn't have worked out any better. It was like to be bumped on the main card, a lot more exposure, a lot more eyes on me, to get a quick finish, to come out unscathed, fight out my contract with a finish like this, to get a bonus. I saw Dana in the back, you know, timing was just working perfect this whole week for me. It was really like someone was watching over me. It was crazy, but he came in the back, congratulated me and told me, you know, it's looking good for that bonus. And, I was just feeling amazing after that.
Wow. So that was actually the last fight on your contract.
That was the last fight.
Oh my.
I brought out my contract. Yep.
Even more pressure.
Exactly. I had a crazy amount of pressure, man. I honestly, I don't know anything but fighting. Like, I don't have a trade. I'm not a handyman. You know, I don't know what other job I would do that I would be happy doing, to be honest. And so I'm terrified to not continue this career and keep making the most money I can doing fighting, because I really have no idea what's next. And I, you know, that's why I try to do media and try to stay in the sport, because I'm passionate about this sport and this sport only. So it was a lot of pressure. But like I said, I'm so proud that I didn't feel it going in there. I smiled through the process. I kept good energy, And it was Team Crystal all the way, baby. Pyrite from P.T. Carroll and Jose Young. Shout out.
That's right. Respect to the MMA fighting crew. I love that. And so do you want to stick around in the UFC?
Yeah, the UFC is where it's at, man. Honestly, if I would have lost on Saturday, I might have contemplated whether I want to fight ever again, because my dream is to be the best in the world. And that was my vision, you know, and that was why it was so hard to deal with the loss to Lineker. As I see, you know, some pictures there, it's like, it was devastating, you know, heartbroken, and my heart didn't come back together and be full again for quite some time. You know, it wasn't ready during that Montel Jackson fight. I wasn't myself yet. It took time off. The injuries were a blessing in disguise, and it really gave me time to reflect and reappreciate why I love this game and to reignite the flame within me and be the best Brian Kelleher.
How difficult was the weight cut?
It was very difficult further out. As I got closer, things went way smoother than I would have imagined. I think 2.5 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I was 158 pounds. And I'm never over 152, 151, usually like 3 to 4 weeks out from a fight. So I was like a little worried there. And then 2 weeks out from the fight, I was like 154. I had stopped taking creatine. I thought maybe that was it. So from there, I started to drop weight. You know, I think I was retaining water from the creatine. And, you know, it ended up coming off smoother than I would have imagined. So everything played out perfect this week.
And so, all right, so you get this victory. And I don't know if you noticed, because you're probably in the zone, but when they played the pre-fight package right before you guys walked out, Odey said that one day people will say Conor McGregor fought on his card. Did you hear that stuff? And did that give you a little extra motivation as the fight was about to begin?
I didn't hear it as they played it, but a couple of people told me he was saying that. And they didn't like that. You know, they're like, well, who is this newcomer thinking, you know, he's going to make a statement like that and say, you know, Conor's on his card. But it was funny because after the weigh-in show, you know, the Irish fans always cheer, ole, 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 ole. So he was making it like, oh, look, I'm already cheering my name. Odey. And I said, no way, no way, no way, no way. So we were going back and forth in the back and it was funny. But yeah, no, I try not to listen to that shit when I'm about to come out. You know, I'm just focused, trying to keep my energy and just remain calm.
And by the way, have you ever had a submission locked in so tight that the arm as well, that the opponent has to tap with his foot? Has that ever happened to you?
We made him tap dance, baby.
That's right.
That's how we do it. that's never happened. And it was weird because when he was in the choke, I knew his hands were all crunched up in there. I had a good chin strap on him, and I don't think he can get his hands out. So he was either going to sleep or he was going to tap his feet. And so he started hitting the mat faster than I've ever imagined with his foot. And it was like weird because I heard it, you know, and I kind of felt it. And I wasn't expecting it, but then the ref stepped in and I was like, oh, okay, that's what it was. He was tapping with his feet there.
First win since February of 2018. This must feel good on a Monday, right? You must have missed this feeling.
Man, I forgot all about this feeling. It was like, I needed this, man. Like, this is what makes me feel alive. And it's just, you know, you don't want to say that, you know, fighting's everything in life, but winning a fight, there's just no feeling like it, because when you put your life and soul into this, and, you know, you end up feeling like, okay, like I'm successful. You know, it was worth it. Like I put all that time and made all those sacrifices and it all came to fruition. It's like, there's no other feeling like it. I feel on top of the world. It couldn't have been any better. I was out for a year. I needed, you know, to make the money, and I made as much money as I possibly could, you know, with winning a bonus and getting a victory like this.
Yeah, great to see you get that bonus as well.
I went to the M&M store in honor of Chase Hooper. We got some peanut M&Ms. That's how Boom celebrates too, baby.
Respect. I love the peanut M&Ms. Probably my favorite, if I'm being honest.
Yes, the best.
I know you're a rapper as well. Could we get some bars here on the victory? Is there anything that we can get to commemorate this big moment?
Oh God!
I'm putting you on the spot. I know.
I know they had me at media day trying to throw a couple lines out there. I threw like two, but it's rough trying to freestyle off the top of the head. But hey, Tyrone Woodley, come see me, man. We need to see who the best rapper in the UFC is. I think a lot of people are behind me.
A battle rap between you and Tyrone Woodley. I'd like to see that. I'd put that on ESPN Plus. Why not? That'd be nice.
I'm in, man.
All right. Well, congratulations, Brian. Very happy for you, my man. What a victory. And what a celebration. I think you headbutted the cage there, reminiscent of, was it Gus Frerotte of the Redskins who once did that? Was it Gus Frerotte? Some quarterback did and injured his neck. I hope you didn't injure yourself. But why did you, by the way, why did you do that?
You know, it was actually funny because before the fight, they're like, do not jump on the cage. Do not jump over the cage. They'll fine you 50%, right? So I'm like, you know what? If I can't jump over and I'm feeling how I feel after a win, I'm going to try to run through that cage. So I saw my brother there, you know, in my corner, and I want to reunite with them after I win and celebrate. So I just ran right into the cage and kind of like saw my brother there and like hit the cage and bounced off. And I was like, why did I do that? Like right after, I'm like, why did I do that? That was stupid.
It was great. I loved it.
It looked cool though.
Yes, yeah. It did. I like the emotion. Congrats. Enjoy the victory. Oh God. That's the most damage you probably took in the fight.
A little something.
Enjoy the win, my man, and I look forward to seeing if you're able to get that big contract from the UFC. Good luck with the negotiations.
Yeah, man, I'm in a perfect spot. You know, let's get a better contract and let's get the ball rolling. Let's get on that April 18th card in Brooklyn, baby.
That's right. Long Island Zone, Brian Kelleher. Congrats.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
There he is. Boom Kelleher, the man, getting back on track. Stopping his winning streak, big win over Oday Osborne, first round submission. And now we see if he's able to, a lot of pressure. I didn't know that was the last fight of his contract. So that certainly added some pressure. But he got it done. He was a +120 underdog. So if you bet on Brian Kelleher, you cashed in. If you bet on Drew Dober, you also cashed in. He was a +260 underdog and got a huge win over Nasrat Haqparast on the ESPN prelims, +260. In fact, his manager, Lloyd Pearson, was very offended by this, kept asking me about the line and if I agreed with it, and then was very quick to celebrate the victory. There he is, Drew Dober, joining us right now. Drew, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Good to have you on the show. Did you know about the line as well, and were you equally offended like Lloyd was?
I saw it, but I just consider like the betting odds a popularity contest anyways, just other people's opinion. And I got the opportunity to win a bunch of money for other people, so yeah, it doesn't bother me any.
I had the opportunity to see you. I think it was Wednesday. I was getting coffee. You were in line at the coffee shop as well. And we were talking about the donuts at the coffee shop. And for a second, I forgot that you were actually fighting on the card because you were just so nicely dressed and you seemed to be in great spirits. The weight cut wasn't starting just yet. But I'm just curious, did you end up getting the donuts afterwards? Did you indulge? Is that your thing?
Yep, that was last night. I got myself half a dozen donuts and definitely indulged a little too much, but that's what Sundays are for, an enjoyment, and now I'm just back on routine. But I did, in fact, get those donuts.
Well done. Well done. I was wondering about that. What a huge win for you. What a huge spot. Did you feel like he was a little overhyped? I mean, I will admit, people, you know, I believe he looked great in his last fight. But was that the mindset, like, I'm going to stop this hype train? No one's really talking about me going into this fight. It's all about him being one of the young studs that they're showcasing on this Conor card.
I was encouraged by his hype train. He had a lot of fans, and he's young, athletic, and energetic, and hungry, and extremely dangerous, too, if you watch his fights leading up to ours. So I was just motivated by seeing how I would do in the fight. I was prepared for a war. I literally thought that we're going to go three rounds, fight of the night type of thing. But, I enjoyed the performance of the night a lot better.
Yeah, we just had Brian Kelleher, who got one of those bonuses. You got the other. And your last two fights after the submission loss mid last year, both very quick knockout finishes. What's the difference now? What's happening? These 1 minute or so finishes that you're getting now back to back. Is anything changed in your life, in your training, that's leading to these great performances?
Yeah. I believe when I was scheduled to fight Josh Berkman, I really focused on the mental aspect of training. And since then, I've been keeping in practice and really just being more mindful and being in the moment. And from what I've found, that when you come in with like this strict game plan or this strict motivation, you become narrow-minded, and it's really hard to gather information. To where now, when I'm just enjoying every second and every moment of this entire fight week, when I get in the cage, like, I'm so relaxed that I can just gather all the information from my opponent and see the opportunity.
Wow. So this wasn't the case earlier in your career?
No, no. Like I was telling my 20s, I felt it was just like all get up and go horsepower, piss and vinegar, you know, and just like it's just having a sports car with a bad driver, you know. And so now I just feel that I'm coming into my prime because I'm incorporating, you know, the mental aspect of everything.
And also your hair is just impeccable these days. How do you keep, I feel like that's a big part of this new you. I mean, how do you keep it in place? What are you putting in your hair before the fights where it's just like, it doesn't even move? It's like, it's right in place after a fight.
Honestly, I wish it didn't move, but if you watch the fight, man, it was just bouncing on my forehead the entire time. Somebody actually commented like, Drew Dober just fixes his hair and knocks people out. And unfortunately, this haircut does get in my face every once in a while.
Shout out to your barber who does a great job. You posted that video on Instagram of you at the weigh-in, like doing the slow motion moving of your hair. You get there it is, right over there. This is amazing stuff. Are you a model as well? We hear about some of the other fighters who moon, you know, Luke Rockhold, but do you models? I feel like you have like the technique down pat.
I mean, I'm interested. Any way I can make money outside of getting punched in the mouth, I'd be into. So if anyone wants to hit me up, I'd be all for it.
You've never done it though. You even have the kind of like sly smile, you know, you got that whole thing down pat, the half smile, if you will.
I think it all started like my mother at such a young age, just kind of grooming me to be a celebrity. She was like, you're going to end up famous somehow. You're going to be an actor, a model. You know, she was trying to get me on The Real World for the longest time.
Oh,
she's outrageous. So I feel like she's the one that started this grooming.
Did you try out for that? Used to be my favorite show back in the day. Did you ever actually try out for it?
No. I don't know how I'd handle with just all that, all the festivities and that long period of time. I don't know if I could handle that. But I did try to go out for The Ultimate Fighter. So that's a very specific Real World.
Right. And what happened there?
I made it on that. The first episode of the Tough Live, where it was just one round.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I competed for minutes to get in the house. Dropped on the judges' scorecards and didn't make it in, but I felt it was a blessing long term.
Why so?
Just so I didn't have to go through. I think that season was 12 weeks in that house,
if not more.
And oh man, that's a war of nutrition. Like it's not even just about the fight anymore. It's just being so uncomfortable all the time and then trying to perform on top of that. But here I am in the UFC, regardless, competing with the best in the world. So I'm just glad I didn't have to go through that 12 weeks.
Do you feel like this win, this moment, maybe represents a turning point in your career? You know, all those people watching, the ratings were tremendous for the prelims, most in the ESPN history of Conor card. More people are watching, so that could lead to more opportunities, more people knowing. Do you sense that? Did you sense afterwards when you went online that more people were talking about your fight?
Oh, yeah. No, I feel it. I feel it was a very, very prestigious event, prestigious fight, and then being able to, you know, win spectacularly like that. It definitely adds to this momentum and this notoriety. And it's my job to use this energy as motivation for my next fight and the fights further on. I think finally now people are seeing what I've been telling myself for years.
Who makes sense next for you?
I like the Iaconta fight.
Ooh.
It goes back for a long, long time. We were scheduled to fight as amateurs, really? Local pros, and going back to the live season of The Ultimate Fighter, we were both on that show too. So I mean, I've had my eyes on him for a long, long time, and it's all respect. The dude's super talented. I love all his fights. So having a dance partner like that would be absolutely amazing.
Okay, and to be clear, this is Ally Quinta you're talking about, right?
I like Ally Quinta or Alex Hernandez. He's another explosive, fantastic fighter that I'm interested in.
Okay, interesting. So you guys were supposed to fight in the amateur scene, and where was that going to be?
It was a local promotion in like the Midwest. It's called Victory Fighting Championship.
Okay.
They were doing like this huge thing. It was like, you know, what is the best or the top lightweight in the nation, amateur wise. And, both Iaconta and my name popped up and we were scheduled to fight. It fell through and then we turned professional. I think, they were trying to make that fight again and that didn't work out. And then we ended up getting on the reality show together. So I was like, I'm going to fight this dude one day.
And maybe now, maybe I know he doesn't have a fight lined up, and is taking a little bit of time off, but he last fought several months ago. So maybe that makes a lot of sense and a good time for your team as well. Elevation Fight Team, Curtis Blaydes, fighting on the Raleigh, I should say, main event spot on Saturday against JDS. Corey Sanhagen, I think, got screwed in that situation, was supposed to fight in the co-main, but you guys are doing big things over there in Colorado.
yeah, Team Elevation has things about it that I've never seen anywhere else. There's the reason I moved out here to be a part of it. I really saw this growth, and it's just, it's a family environment that really encourages growth. You know, nobody's, you know, trying to step on other people to get ahead. Everyone's growing together, and, you know, we're seeing from the athletes that, you know, it works.
Congratulations on the win, Drew, and I'm happy you got those donuts afterwards. You look great all week, and you look phenomenal in the fight itself. So well done to you. Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm glad people appreciate it.
All right, there he is, Drew Dober with the big victory Saturday night and one of the bigger underdogs. I think we've had three underdogs who won on Saturday. Roxanne Modafferi was the biggest, plus 550. It ended up closing as Kelleher, plus 120, Dober, plus 260. So well done to all three of them. Now, of course, the big story on Saturday, the return of Conor McGregor winning in 40 seconds against Donald Cerrone, the shoulder strikes, which Michael Bisping wasn't all that impressed by, also Kevin Lee as well. But a very impressive scene, a very impressive Conor all week. People were wondering how he would respond. People were wondering how he would look, given the time off, given everything that he's been through. Told me last week that, you know, he was drinking leading up to the Khabib fight, whether or not, you know, he said this time around he was sober, whether or not that contributed to his performance. Hard to argue against that, but if he can stay this locked in and this focused, and he's told us now time and again, this is the way I want things to go. I want to fight multiple times this year, at least three times. I want to be active. I want to, you know, I want to be in the gym. I'm going to take Sunday off, and then I'm going to get right back in the gym on Monday. So today is Monday, and we'll talk to his head coach, John Kavanaugh, later on and find out if, in fact, he, you know, went back to the gym or is planning on going back to the gym. I know they're still in Las Vegas, but if the UFC can get three fights out of Conor McGregor, they did a $11 million gate, a little more than 11, I think 11.1, fourth highest in UFC history. He is now responsible for three of the fourth largest gates in UFC history. The one lone one that he wasn't a part of, UFC 129, that was the Toronto card you see right over there, 11.1 for UFC 246. 129, 12.1, 17.2 for 229. That was the Khabib card. And then, of course, 205, the first MSG card, 17.7. 11.1 for a guy who people said his popularity was dimming, a guy who people said was shot, a guy who people said no one cared about anymore, a fight that people said no one cared about. What do you think it's going to be in his next fight now with the whole world eating out of his palm once again? I thought that he handled everything perfectly. I thought he was, you know, I think a lot was made of the fact that, you know, he didn't answer the question about the sexual assault allegations at the press conference. I think he was ready to answer that question. I think that they shouldn't have stepped in. I obviously the fans acted like jackasses in that moment, and it's to be expected. It's a press conference. They don't want that. But hey, I think he was ready to answer it. And I think that would just been one more thing. That was the lone negative thing that people were writing about, that wasn't answered, even though he addressed it in our interview. He was ready to answer that question, and we'll see how that situation plays out, and we'll see if he's, you know, able to continue to fight here in America. But as far as his demeanor, as far as the way he was acting towards Cerrone, I felt like he looked like a man who was grateful to be back, who appreciated being back, who appreciated the moment, who missed all of this, who missed, you know, being in the spotlight, in the limelight, who missed fighting. And he was on point, and what a way to start, what a way to come back. And now it just opens up a bunch of possibilities for him. Like I said, he has a ton of options, and I'm reminded of what he told me in 2015 after he beat Jose Aldo. He said, the fight game is all about numbers and options. Well, he's got the numbers, you saw them, and you know he's going to make a hell of a lot more. I feel like they almost gave the UFC a discount on this one. They just wanted to get back. But make no mistake about it, people are over. Remember, he said in the interview, that was a one-fight deal, essentially. You don't think they're going to be talking about more money going into the next one? He's got the options as well. In fact, I asked on Twitter before the show, who do you want to see Conor fight next? Not who will he fight next, but who do you want to see him fight next? The four options were Jorge Masvidal, who was in attendance. Conor didn't like the Versace robe, but he was there. Seemed to draw his ire. Number two, obviously, Nathan Diaz, who Conor mentioned in the post-fight press conference. Mike Vaughn asked him about Diaz, and you notice he said Nathan. He said Nathan, which I will take as a sign of respect towards Mr. Diaz, but also that he's a, you know, loyal watcher of our program here. Number three, Khabib Ferguson winner. And again, can't just write Khabib. Can't just write Khabib. He's fighting Tony Ferguson on April 18th. He's won 12 in a row, for God's sake. So, winner of that fight, April 18th. And again, I want to remind you, Ramadan coming up after that fight. This idea that he's just going to sit around and wait to fight Khabib is insane. He's not going to sit around and wait till September. Absolutely not. Or October. It's not going to happen. He told me in my interview, which we'll play for you in just a second, that he wants to fight before the summer. He guarantees he'll fight before the summer. And the other one was Justin Gaethje. I think those are the four main ones. I don't want to entertain the idea right now of the Floyd fight. I don't want to see him stray away. That's what kind of started this mess. Stick to what you're good at. Stick to what you're best at, right? When I was a kid, I was annoyed that Michael Jordan went to play baseball. It was cool for like 2 months, but then I wanted to see him come back to basketball, even though I hated the Bulls. You want to see the best compete at what they're best at. And Conor McGregor, I don't care what any of you say, is still one of the best fighters on the planet. Now, he still has some work to do, but at some point, he will get the respect that he deserves if he continues to keep doing this. Look at the resume at this point. Between Mendez and Poirier and Aldo and Eddie Alvarez. Like, look at the resume. The Diaz second win. What he did to Cerrone here. So if he keeps this up, he'll start to get that respect again. So the question is, who is next and when is it? What's the status of the poll?
Status of the poll is with over 46,000 votes. Jorge Masvidal leads with 54.4%.
Whoa.
Then the Khabib versus Tony winner with 18.6%. Justin Gaethje with 17.4%. And Nathan Diaz rounds it out with 9.6%.
Wow, that shocks me. Nathan Diaz last? I thought it would have gone Jorge, Diaz, Khabib Ferguson winner, and then Gaethje. I think Gaethje was actually the big loser on Saturday, not being in attendance. I think Jorge being in attendance, I think Usman being in attendance, who, by the way, has a cast, I don't think that's going to happen next. But I think not being there, not attaching yourself to the fight was a mistake. I personally think that was a big mistake. But wow, big vote for Masvidal. Nathan Diaz last. That's shocking. Anyway, we'll see how it plays out. We'll talk to his manager later in the show, Adiatar. We'll talk, of course, to John Kavanaugh as well. Connor, a lot of you were saying, why isn't Connor on the show? Hasn't the guy given me enough over the past week? I mean, I can't keep going back to that well. Gave me the 1 hour sit down and gave me the post fight interview, which meant a lot to me. First time I was back there since 2016. So I want to thank him for that. And it was great to be back there with the team. Great to be interviewing him again and great to see them in good spirits. So in case you missed that post fight interview with Connor, moments after his victory on Saturday night in the locker room, here it is.
After everything that you have been through since the Khabib fight, is it possible to put into words what this moment means to you?
Hard work pays, you know what I mean? I'm no different than I was before. I just was committed and worked hard and earned it. And that's it. We are all equal, I feel, you know. It's the work you're willing to put in and the commitment you're willing to put in. And I was committed this camp and I'm happy and proud to represent my team and our work.
Is it fair to say that you're a little emotional right now?
Of course. I mean, fighting is an emotional game. You've no idea. It's a roller coaster of emotion. Maybe a little more this time. All I've gone through and all the team's gone through and all my people's gone through. And it's good to get us back where we belong.
Do you feel like a weight has been lifted off your shoulders?
If it is, I want it back on. You know what I mean? So, no. I just feel good. I'm very, very happy. Very, very proud.
Your first victory since November of 2016. Did you miss this feeling, like being here with your team, your family, getting to celebrate after a fight?
Oh, come on now, I lost bleeding twice. I lost in a boxing match and then I tapped in an MMA fight. I've never really been beat, let's be real. You've never seen me beat. Do you know what I mean? You beat a man by concussing him with blows to them, no? Do you know what I mean? So, putting him down. So, two matches, that narrative of so long since I went, you know what I mean? It's just been, I've been outside the game and sporadic with my commitment to it, so it's good to be back most certainly though.
Did you expect the fight to start out that way? Was that what you envisioned?
I just don't know, I just saw, I always wanted to go through him with the shot, the first shot, and he dipped under and he didn't shoot fair play to him, you know what I mean, he just dipped under, but no, I'm happy with the fight. Could have went many ways, you know, he was planning to head kick me, he wanted to knock me out with a head kick, so... Happy to catch him. I knew he had flaws with that in his own game. What a record he has to hold the most head kick knockouts. It's a phenomenal record. So to catch him with the head kick, I'm very, very pleased with that.
You were quick to tell us afterwards, first man to get a finish at 145, 155, 170. Is this something that you knew about?
It's my name. Yes, I did. I told you off camera and I told you not to say nothing, you know what I mean? So that was something I was going for, to knock out victory off across three weight divisions. Granted, it was a technical knockout, but the knockout nonetheless, you know, so... Donald's a phenomenal fighter. He's not easy to put away, so no one puts him away like that in 40 seconds. So very happy with it, very pleased, and on we go.
Do you feel like the fight went a little too long? Could have been stopped earlier.
Probably, yeah, probably. I had to recenter myself because I dived on him a little bit, and I should have picked the shots a little bit, but that would probably be my lack of... time in the cage, right? I've been out so long, so when you get that little rush of excitement, you jump on it. But then I could hear John in the corner, settle, pick your shots, and then I controlled the head, picked the shots, and got the stoppage, and I'm happy.
I know it's very fresh, but how quickly do you want to come back?
Yeah, very, very quickly. I'm God willing, I came out fresh here tonight, so I'll like I said, I'll have a celebration tonight, a little celebration. I'll spend time with the family, and then I'll back to training, so... I'm sure we'll talk in the coming within the next week and see what happens.
You think you're back before the summer?
I'd say so, yeah. Possibly, yeah. Yeah, I would, yeah. Yes.
At 170?
We'll see. Either or. Could be anything.
I know in the cage you didn't want to call anyone out, but in your heart, is there an opponent in mind?
There's a load of them. So I'm just building myself. You know, there's still work to be done, I feel. You know, there's still a lot of work to be done. I heaped some amount of workload on top of me in this camp. And at times, I had to take a back step for a couple of days to recover. So now, I think that I've built that foundation again. I can sustain the workload and continue. So there's much more in me. So I'm going to keep on that, keep that mindset, and keep pushing forward.
Did you notice Jorge Masvidal wearing your Versace robe?
Yeah, I don't know what that was about. Talk about baloney, because that looked ridiculous to me. Was it my actual robe?
No, but it looked like the one that you wore before the Mayweather.
The black one, yeah. It was ridiculous, Cardi. I don't know what that was about.
I was trying to get your attention, right?
Talented. I don't know. That's a bit weird. I don't give a... Yeah, whatever.
That seems to be the one everyone wants. Yeah, do you want
it? Yeah, no problem. We can do that. No problem. So he's trying to get my attention. Is he what kind of underwear was he wearing? Do you know what I mean? Like, what kind of weird is that? Like, do you know what I mean? I don't know what that means. I have a laden house coat. Like the grannies in Ireland wear house coats, watching the soaps. You know, like the soap opera shows. So like, me nanny wears that. Like, do you know what I mean? I don't know what that was about. But okay.
As far as the critics, is there anything you want to say to everyone who said you were shot, 170 was a mistake, all that stuff and more?
No, nothing. Silence, you know what I mean? Just focus on the positive, focus on the support. Very grateful for the people that stuck with me through this trying time, and this one's for them.
And considering how good all this went, you know, the whole week went for you, you were in such a good place mentally, right? Yeah. Maybe now this is the new Conor, like, no more tension, no more...
No, I'm the real Conor. I'm just going to be real. I've always been real, whatever the situation is. I'm not going to blame. I'm just going to be real to the situation and true to myself.
And I have to ask, I see your father, the great Tony McGregor, here. And I noticed that you mentioned your mother a couple times. Is everything okay with her?
Yeah, my mother's good. My mother's the strongest woman I know. I love her dearly, and she's back at home. She couldn't make the flight this time, you know, so just want to show her support. And I love my mother dearly, the strongest woman I know.
You dedicated this to her?
Yes, yes.
Your son here?
You know, I went through that. I brought him to the weigh-ins, and I brought my daughter to the weigh-ins. And Junior was, because Donald's son, right, is only about one and a bit, right? Junior's about two, like almost three, just over two and a half. So he's a little bit more aware of what's the situation. And so yesterday he was a little bit taken back at the weigh-in, and that was kind of a tester for me. And then also the fight is 10 p.m. You know what I mean? I'm not blading keeping him out here, but after 10 p.m. And then it's a mad scene as well. Like, it's crazy in there. So, like, I had him for the last two fights because he was a little bit younger. Now he's kind of understanding, but not understanding at the same time. So we left him at home with my daughter, and that was it. It would have been a great moment. You know what I mean? I love the way Donald does it with Danger, and that makes me respect him so much more because I understand that so deeply. Do you know what I mean? So, but maybe another time, maybe in a few years' time, you know, but not tonight.
Why no Billy Strutt?
I don't know, maybe when you actually really hit a Billy, you don't need the strut like the Billy strut. And I don't know. I just do whatever I feel natural, you know what I mean? I feel everyone was waiting for it, so I just skipped around it. You know what I mean? Keep them guessing.
just when they think they have all the answers, you change the questions, like Roddy Piper. Finally, is there anything you want to say to the people of Ireland? I noticed that you mentioned Ireland right off the bat. Anything you want to say to your supporters?
Thank you all for the support, my nation. I love you dearly. I appreciate the backing and the support over the years. I know Ireland is very proud of my successes, and you know they hold me accountable sometimes when I let them down, and that motivates me. And I'm very, very, I love my country dearly, so I'm very honoured to raise my tricolour here tonight for the people of Ireland.
You're back. From nothing to something to everything again, my man. Yes, congratulations. Enjoy the victory, Connor.
Thank you, Ariel. Appreciate the work. Man, thank you, sir. Thank you.
That was a great privilege right there. You don't get to go in the locker room after a big victory quite often. And when I walked in, they were all together. The team was huddling together, celebrating. And just to be there for a few minutes was really, really cool. So thank you very much to Connor and the UFC for allowing that to happen. A couple of postscripts. You notice that I asked him about the record of being the first man to get a finish at 145, 155, 170. And he kind of put me on blast. He said that he told me about this beforehand, and he did tell me, but he said not to say anything. And I respected that. But after my interview with him, in Las Vegas before the fight, he said he wanted to tell me something. And I was like, oh, there's something juicy. You know, he's got a secret. He's got some insider information, something. He's like, I'm going to tell you something, but you better not say it before the fight. I said, all right, I promise. And he said, when I get this victory, when I knock him out, I'll be the first man to get a knockout finish at 145, 155, 170. But don't say anything. I want to say it. I was like, okay. And of course, like, that's not big news. Someone could have figured that out on their own. Andrew Davis, Mike Bond, all you other stats people out there, you could have figured it out yourself. And maybe someone else mentioned it, but that was a really big deal to him. And you notice when he talks about the head kick stuff, you know, Cerrone having the record for most head kicks and all that, you notice these things mean a lot to him, which I find to be fascinating. And so there you have it. He's the first man to do that, and he wanted to be the guy to say it, which I thought was really interesting. No Billy Strutt. I know you appreciate the hard-hitting journalism there. We were all waiting for it, wanted to see it, played the package of all the people copying him over the years, and he didn't do it. And so he switched it up on us, but I guess that makes him a very good showman. And then you could see, you know, we talked about what's next, and he didn't really even rule out 155, although if you look that good at 170 and you're that happy not having to cut weight, why at this point would you consider it? In a matter of moments, we're going to be joined by Jorge Masvidal to get his thoughts on the fight and Connor's comments. He really didn't seem to like the robe. And I will admit, I'm not smart enough. Smarter people, I'm not sure who told me about it first. Was it New York Rick? Maybe I'm giving him too much credit here. By the way, what about this?
We know who told you first.
Did you tell me?
Yeah, bro.
You were the one.
Yeah.
You know what?
Who do you think told New York Rick?
Yeah, right.
Ask him.
My God.
Ask him.
Wow, you are the one. I tweeted the video, and you're the one who... Okay, but where did you see it, is the question.
Scrolling Twitter.
All right, well, like, who deserves the credit?
It was crazy.
Unbelievable. You
just
stole
someone's
idea.
Definitely not New York Rick, I'll tell you that much.
Wow, and then they posted it on ESPN MMA, right?
He can say, you're welcome to me.
Wow. He's going to text in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. He actually called you out earlier. He said, you're recapping UFC 246, and the Connor figurine is not squaring off with the cowboy bobblehead. This is why corporate Jake will never be New York Rick. Can we just very quickly get rid of the lower third right over there? I made the switch. You see right there? Connor figurine.
You can tell him if he wants to set up the desk every week, he can.
Oh, look at that. And cowboy bobblehead. That's pretty nice. Should we have done it like this? Maybe we should have done it like this. I mean, it was right there for the taking. And how about this? Cara Dune, like that Best Buy woman in the middle. You see that? See what I just did right over here? This is great stuff. Oh. Other side of the computer? Right here? Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, that's an obvious one, right? Uh-oh. He's writing. He said, we're not going to verify info reported on the show. Jake just out here lying. By the way, Jake's getting shots from all corners. TST now weighing in, saying that he would never make a mistake like that. You know who wouldn't make that mistake? Roman of ESPN.com. And by the way, you can check out our entire coverage over at ESPN.com/MMA. The team did a phenomenal job of covering from last week. Well, really, from the moment the fight was announced. But from Monday to Sunday, I thought it was... a really great job by everyone involved. And again, it was really great to be a part of the whole machine that is our coverage. ABC had a pre-fight show, my friends. ABC was founded. The American Broadcasting Company was founded in 1943. 1943, ABC was founded. 2020. What is that? 56 plus 20, 86 years? Am I right? 86 years? Anyway, in the 86, I think, history of ABC, they had never aired any kind of MMA coverage at all. Not a fight, obviously. Not a Barker show, a countdown show. Not a, I don't know, a special. Nothing. Ever. And at 2 p.m. Eastern, they aired a live pre-fight show. Masvidal was a part of it. Michael Leaves was hosting. Dana White was on it. Myself, Brett Okamoto, Michael Bisping, Chael Sonnen. Who else? Stephen A. Smith. And by the way, I feel like a lot of people are giving Stephen A. Smith a lot of crap just because they think that first of all, Stephen A., like, you guys think that he doesn't know MMA? The man follows MMA. He does. He talks to me about it all the time, and not just a Conor fight. I remember when, I think it was Ngannou JDS last year, he was talking to me about that. Like, the fight nights, he watches them all. Now, I'm not saying he's an expert. He's not even saying he's an expert, and he doesn't even need me to defend him. But what did he say that was wrong? Cowboy Cerrone lost in 40 seconds. That's it. Bisping just said the exact same thing in a different way. Kevin Lee just said the exact same thing in a different way. There's no case to be made. Cerrone has never fought in a fight where he didn't land at least one strike. He was outstruck 19 to nothing. Now, it was bad luck. It was a shot. Whatever the case is, fine. I mean, but at the end of the day, it was a pretty one-sided fight. And it lasted 40 seconds. What more is there to say? So I feel like people are just taking shots for the sake of taking shots because, you know, it's cool to say that Stephen A. doesn't know, or he's a casual, or, you know, he's just a Johnny come lately, or, you know, he has no business being on the broadcast. First of all, he's not really on the broadcast. He's on the SportsCenter rap, you know, recap afterwards. And, second of all, what he was saying was pretty much what everyone was saying. And the cries that it was fixed. I mean, at one point are we going to stop with this stuff? Just because a fight ends quickly where you have two men competing in a cage and it's 4 ounce gloves and it's as brutal as it is, it doesn't mean it's fixed. It doesn't mean it's fixed when it ends quickly. Was the Aldo fight fixed? Like, what about that fight led you to believe that it was fixed? What about those shots lead you to think that it's fixed? It's just such a tired, lazy narrative. You could be unhappy that Conor really lost, that Cerrone lost, that Conor won. You could be unhappy that it, you know, lasted just 40 seconds, or, you know, that you spent $65. I get that. Trust me, I get that. You spent $65 or $1,000 on tickets or something like that. I get being upset. I get feeling let down. I get it. But it wasn't fixed. Donald Cerrone has way too much integrity to fix a fight. You don't do that sort of thing. You absolutely don't. At this stage in his career, he doesn't have to fix fights. He was getting paid up front. What does he have to fix a fight for? Come on. Stop it with that. That's taking away from Cerrone and his integrity and who he is as a man, and that's taking away from Conor's victory as well. And so now the big question is, as we move on from this fight, who is he going to fight next? Well, we just did the poll, and the overwhelming favorite with, what, 30,000 votes or something like that, Corporate Jake? 40,000 votes? 56% of you are saying that you want to see Masvidal versus Conor McGregor. Well, let's ask the BMF champion himself, Jorge Masvidal, who's kind enough to join us, what he thinks about it all. Jorge, how are you, my man?
I'm alive. How you guys doing?
I'm doing great. What's going on with the hair? It's like a half bun.
I was taking out my braids, and then I got a little lazy and stuff and whatever. And then I forgot I had the interview.
It's all good. I think it's actually a good look, if I'm being honest.
So?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I got to finish him.
Respect you. What are we eating? French toast?
Breakfast burrito.
Oh, man. I wish I could have a breakfast burrito right now. Well, thank you for joining us. Sorry to bother you. We appreciate it. So you were there in the front row. You drew a lot of attention. First things first, what did you think of the fight itself?
It was good. It was violent. I think I called it in every single interview. I said it'd start violent, end violent, you know. Both guys get after it. Always looking for a finish. It was a good fight, all 40 seconds of it.
Were you expecting it to be that quick?
A big part of me, yeah. If Cowboy didn't come in with the right game plan from the start, I knew it could be a short night for him, you know? He's not a great sprinter off the blocks. Connor is. I mean, I said it on every interview.
Right. And the beginning of the fight was actually a little reminiscent of your fight against Ben Askren, right?
The what?
The beginning of the fight was actually reminiscent of your fight against Askren, the way it all started with the knee to the face. Somewhat unintentionally, but it was almost the exact same thing.
Yeah, it was like the hip, I think, hit him in the face.
Yeah. Now, what about the shoulder strikes? People are not, it seems like they don't want to give Connor credit for the shoulder strikes, saying that, you know, you shouldn't be able to get hurt that badly from shoulder strikes. What do you think of them?
Why does it sound so muffled?
It sounds muffled? You can't hear me?
Right. Now a little bit better.
Okay. What do you think of the shoulder strikes?
Were don't you worry, we're going to get one of those good electronic phones so this doesn't happen.
Okay. Well, you look great, by the way, and you sound great to us.
I always look great.
You do.
You don't have to say it.
What'd you think of the shoulder strikes?
They're cute, you know. I always like to see new techniques that are effective in any which way, as long as in the legal realm, you know. So I thought it was pretty cute, you know. It's cool.
Okay.
They ain't gonna do shit. Them shoulder strikes ain't gonna do nothing but tickle me, but, you know.
So afterwards, he gets on the microphone and he didn't seem impressed with what you were wearing and said the same in the interview with me. Said he compared it to what the grandmothers wear, they wear that to watch the soap operas in Ireland. First, let me ask you, what was the inspiration behind the outfit?
Numerous things. The main thing is that I didn't feel like leaving the house. So then when I had to leave, I was like, I'll just stay comfortable. I'll be in my PJs. And I showed up in my PJs.
People said that you wore that because he wore that outfit prior to the Mayweather fight. Is that true?
I'm gonna leave that open to interpretation. I'm gonna leave that up for people's discussion threads. But all I know is that he don't want the fight, so I don't give a fuck no more. We're moving on from that fight, man. You know, this dude doesn't want the fight. I'm not here to bully it, you know. I guess it's Usman's head. He sealed Usman's fate now, you know. This guy doesn't want to fucking fight, man. Leave him be. Once you get the trilogy with Nate, God bless him. Do your thing, my brother, you know. I can give a fuck less. This just seals Usman's fate. Usman, you punk motherfucker, you're dead.
But wait a second.
When you see this interview, look me in my eyes, Usman. When you see this interview and know that nothing but the truth comes from me, you're fucking dead.
What
Not
makes
you, Ariel.
No, I know. I come in peace, hands behind my back. But what makes you think that he doesn't want the fight? Because I asked him, and multiple people asked him, and he never said no. He said, yeah, sure, well, that he could get it. I'd like that belt, too. You know, I wouldn't mind. What makes you think he doesn't want it?
He doesn't want it, man. He had right there. He could have cut the sickest promo of all time. He could have, you know, and he could have just been a good promo. He could have cut it. You know, things he's been saying, I don't think so, you know. And I personally, the Tiger needs to get fed, so I'm going to have to go on the cage. I'm getting bored already of fucking not fighting, you know.
Hmm. Usman has a cast on, so it might be a while for him. I saw your manager yesterday suggest that you guys should do an interim title fight, you and Connor, because Usman is out.
That'd be good, too, if Connor wanted to do that. But one of these two guys is going to have to scrap with me. I'm leaning right now towards Usman, the way he's been talking, the shit he's been saying. But if Connor wants it, we'll get it done, you know. It won't be hard to get it done, but I'm not going to sit here and entertain bullshit and stuff, you know. I just want to scrap.
So you were unimpressed with his post-fight talk?
Not that I'm not impressed. I mean, he has different plans. I'm not trying to ruin his plans either. He's got his own plans, things he wants to do. Go and get them done, my brother. You know, I give a fuck less. I'm going to get money no matter what.
Were you surprised that he seemed to be that bothered by the outfit?
I didn't even know that he was bothered by the outfit. I didn't know, man. But if he's pissed off, I mean, fuck. You know, there's only one thing to do if you're pissed off. You know?
Hmm.
I definitely wore it better. That might be a reason why he's upset, you know.
How much does an outfit like that cost? Do you mind me asking?
I can't say all that. It was a gift, so I really don't know, Ariel.
Oh, okay. Was it from Donatella Versace herself?
No, it wasn't. I wish.
Okay.
I don't have access to her like that.
Because I think she gave him The original one that he wore.
Nice. That's nice. See? That's a power move right there. That's nice. Or maybe he just said that. I don't know. But nah, mine was a gift.
Okay. I saw on your Twitter, it said, I saw all that I needed to see, essentially. So what does that mean?
I was just like to be like a fly in the wall when certain competitors are fighting. I showed up to the Nate fight just to watch as a fan, but also just in case we were to cross paths. In the real time, there's certain things that I could see that in the camera I could still see them, but not the same. You know, from everything, from the language, when he walks into the cage, what he's doing before, what he's doing after, all these little things that I get to see, just like a fly in the wall, you know, little movements, feints, everything from how they're breathing, everything. I got a clinical eye when it comes to that stuff, and I could see a lot of things, especially in the FaceTime.
And what did you walk away with?
Well, like every fight that I'm about to go into, I do like a thesis report on it. You know, I pass it by the math department, and I do the square roots on what's his face and that. And then I come up with a formula, and then I stick to that formula no matter what.
But you came away with stuff from that fight, even though it was so short?
Yeah. I took my cliff notes. I fucking emailed myself, you know, these points that I wouldn't forget, strong bullet points. We're ready. We got a formula to eliminate them.
So why are we poo-pooing this? I feel like this was the thing. I mean, the fans clearly wanted 56% of 40,000, 50,000 votes that we had on our poll today say they want you.
Of course they want me because they know that I'm going to bring extreme violence. But you know, and it sucks to say this, just because the fans and me want it, we can't force a man in this. I don't think that's even legal. You can't force this guy to fight me. What do you want me to do, Eric?
With all due respect, I feel like he's not the issue. I feel like the only one who's really openly against this right now is Dana. I feel like Connor hasn't said no to this. He's pretty much said yes to everything, at least publicly. I don't know about privately.
Then we'll get it done, you know. Dana doesn't like it for different reasons. I don't know if I could say why Dana doesn't.
You can tell.
Why he's saying things, you know? I think to me it's more like a... Okay, never mind. I was told another thing.
Oh, come on, Abe. What are you ruining our moment here? We need the honest truth.
Abe, he wants to know, man.
Abe, come here. Let's talk to you, Abe. Right. Come here. Abe, I have a big bone to pick with you. Interim title? You're going to campaign for an interim title? Really? Come on. The BMF title is way more prestigious than an interim title. Don't diminish your guy.
I agree with you. I agree with you, Ariel, but unfortunately... to be able to get Connor to get to the fight, I think there has to be what he wants, and that's pretty much a 170-pound belt and the BMF belt. So for us to make that happen, and Usman looks like he's injured. He's got a cast on his hand, so I don't know how long he's going to be out for. I just figured it's the easiest way to make that fight happen, but, you know, like my man says, nobody can force another man to get into the cage, you know, without, I guess, putting a gun to their head or giving them a contract. So. What we think is going to stay with us, and, you know, we'll figure out the rest.
Okay, but you're on the front lines. Do you feel like this is possible? Does the UFC really not want this fight? It's the biggest fight they can put on right now.
I personally think they do want the fight. I think they do. I think they want both fights, actually. I think if the UFC really was trying to do this, they would probably want the Masvidal fight first, and then Conor goes up against Khabib afterwards. I think that sets their whole year up perfectly, but who knows?
Okay. And if it was up to you, Masvidal, which one means more to you right now, Jorge?
Say it again?
Which one, like, if it's up to you, both guys want it? Because I know you were asked this question on Thursday, but now it's Monday and the fights happen. Which one do you actually want more, Usman or Connor?
Well, I make a considerable larger paycheck with Connor.
Yeah.
But if it's on the personal side, if it's all potatoes and tomatoes mean the same, I would take a lot more pleasure in dismantling Usman's face than I would Connor's. I would have a sincere joy inside of me, like a kid on Christmas opening numerous gifts, if Usman was the dude that I got to baptize.
Why is that?
Definitely. There's something about his face. I don't like it. It doesn't sit well with me. I don't like his attitude as well either. Little comments of who I've been doing this 16 fucking years. I'm the fighter of the year, and I'm at your fucking weight class, and you're going to be as corny and a petty-ass troll and say who. You know, but the dude ain't got no personality, though. He has 17 different fucking personalities up there, but not one of them is made for TV. So I'm going to fuck his ass up, man, you know?
Okay.
And if not, whatever. He doesn't want it. I'm going to make this abundantly clear in every fucking interview that I get asked about this coward. He wants to fight the guy that's ranked below me. Because there's this ranking system for people that don't know. Because a lot of my fans are just tuning in for the first time. They don't know the system too much. So I'm going to take like 5 seconds to explain it.
Okay.
There's a ranking system. And I'm ranked in this system. He wants to fight the guy that's ranked below me that he already beat. He says that's a tougher fight. He sounds like one hell of a politician to me.
Mm.
And I don't like politicians. Except Mr. Trump. He's pretty cool.
Okay.
You see the problem we have here, Ariel?
Yeah. Well, now you're
a bunch of dudes that don't want to. I got a bunch of dudes that don't want to fight me. I'm just gonna end up having to play by myself. Segregated population. I don't give a fuck that I can play well by myself.
But I will just say respectfully, I asked Connor about, you know, you being the opponent next for him and your status in that weight class, and he seemed open to it. So maybe you know something that I don't.
So let's do it. Yeah. Stop flirting and put it together, man. July 6th, International Fight Week, because I know March is already booked.
Yeah.
Fucking May's Brazil, all this stuff. So I guess July International Fight Week would be a great time to fucking have the biggest event of the history of the sport, you know, in International Fight Week. So, Con, if you want to do it, let's do it, bro. If not, let me know. I got shit to do, man.
I mean, what a payday. What do you think you could get for something like that? That would be probably the biggest payday of your career.
Will be the biggest payday in my career, my brother. I can't tell you how much I'm gonna make because
Abel get mad.
A lot of bad things will happen if I say that.
Sure.
No, there's more stalkers and more people saying that I owe him money and lawsuits and things like that. So I'm doing this fight for free.
Okay. Yep. I got you. Things have changed in your life. So much has changed. I mean, now you've got your own mezcal. Is it called mezcal?
Yes, sir.
I've never tried.
Case coming in like sometime next week. It should get there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Congratulations. It was cool to see you up there with Steve-O. You got your own little private party. You're hosting a press conference. I mean, you really took advantage of last week in Las Vegas. You're being interviewed. When's a non-competitor being interviewed right before the main event on the pay-per-view? This never happens.
Right.
So that's why I feel like I like popping
cherries, Ariel. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm a dirty motherfucker, so I like to pop cherries.
Okay. I'm not sure what that means.
Also, I was on ABC. ABC's been broadcasting since the 1940s, and they've never had MMA content. Guess who was the first one to pop that cherry?
I'm not sure.
This nasty motherfucker right here.
Okay. All right. Well done. I think Abe deserves all the credit for that.
Yeah, he deserves some.
And you even have now, like, you even 30. Have fighters paying homage to you, Brian Kelleher, with his hands behind his back. You see that? Brian Kelleher.
Oh, shit, yeah. I was there live. I didn't hear you when you said the name. Yeah.
He had
his hand. That guillotine was disgusting, man. That was a nice fucking guillotine. We were there, cage-tied. I mean, that fight started out explosive. That Jamaican dude is crazy athletic. That was a fucking hell of a fight, man.
It was. Great. There it is, right over there. There's the photo.
Yeah. Him.
Look at that.
This dude's talented that he can rap too, man.
Yes. He's a great guy. We just had him on. Well, so I have to say, I thought you were going to come out, you know, responding to the comments about the robe and everything like that, saying you're next, 42nd, this and that. But it sounds like you're kind of moving on.
He wants it. He's going to, thou shalt receive.
Mm.
But if you don't want it, what do you can't keep asking this question, Ariel.
Nine.
Not a thing. That contract gets in front of my face. The numbers add up to what I'm asking for. Yeah, freaking Connor's getting baptized on TV, man. It's easy math. Simple.
Did you hear Anthony Joshua use baptized when he squared off with Tyson Fury? He said the same thing, that he's going to baptize him.
Wilder,
Deontay Wilder, my bad.
Yeah. I guess he had he thinks that he's the preacher, but there's only one dude baptizing motherfucker. I'm going to show it off again. I'll show it off. We got to have a competition of who baptizes better, me and Mr. Wilder, if anything.
And by the way, can I just ask you, what's up with the pizza thing where you're folding the pizzas now, like two slices? Is that a real thing? It seems like a lot of bread.
You don't like that?
No, it just seems...
double the flavor in your mouth. Double the explosion.
Okay. All right. That's your thing?
Yeah. We're actually having a pizza pop-up. So I'm going with one of my really good chef friends to Nueva York, and we'll be having a pop-up there. I'll be dropping that time soon, but it's going to be good pizza, man.
Okay.
Being given out to the public. And I'll be serving it, so, you know, what's up.
And my colleague Chael Sonnen told a story about you at a club. Is that a real story?
I plead the fifth.
Bisping's sharing stories about you now. You guys are like best buds.
Yeah, but I have no recollection of that story. I don't know anything.
Okay. Well, he's just exposing your stuff. All right. So to recap, you do want this fight, but you're not going to be asking for it anymore. You're done doing that. You showed up. You did your thing. He didn't call you out. And if not, you're moving on to Usman.
Bingo.
Nailed it. And did they tell you how long Usman's going to be out?
Yeah, he's out indefinite, like 2 years or something like that. I heard.
Well, what are you going to do? You're going to wait for 2 years?
Nah, I'm not waiting for nobody's ass, man. I'll find somebody to dismantle in the meantime. I'll keep myself occupied. This is the only thing that helps me with my anxiety and all my low self-esteem issues and stuff. I have to kick somebody.
I don't believe you have that for a second. Okay, last thing. If you do fight Conor, would you put the belt up?
I've already explained this. If I'm putting my belt up, you got to put something up, you know, because that's like Mr. Dana White said in company. It's one out of one. It's mine forever. It won't be done again. Yada, yada, yada. You know, and then anyway, Conor's a fuckboy, man. You know, he said he designed the belt and then he said that the belt is ugly. What the fuck? So you fucking designed the ugly belt, motherfucker? Take pride in that then. You know, because you were saying that the belt's not this, not that. But I remember him tweeting that he signed off on the belt. Mm. Is this guy just spewing lies everywhere, just like his $80 million he made to fucking fight Cowboy? The fuck out of here, bro.
You don't believe that? You
know, that's the thing. I'm not going to sit here and bullshit with nobody, man. You want to fight? We're going to fucking fight. We're going to baptize you. And you're going to go to 55 and you know, go do your own thing down there. But at 70, it's only me. It's only me, man.
You don't believe the $80
million? I pray that somebody would make that much money.
Sure.
I pray whoever it be that somebody broke those barriers so people keep pushing the boundaries on the paychecks. But I don't think so. I just don't think so, man.
Okay. And just to be clear, because you said you already explained it, what would you want from him if he doesn't have a belt?
We got to put up some of that cash money then if you want this belt. I got to talk to my dad because I gave it to him anyways.
Sure.
My dad's a gambling man, and my dad wouldn't mind me gambling the belt, but he's got to put some type of collateral, fucking nice chunk of money or something.
Uh-huh. Okay. So you've made it clear. Can I ask Abe before we go, what's the game plan?
Hey, we need you again.
What's the game plan, Abe?
What's the game plan for Jorge's next move?
Yeah.
We are patient individuals. Patience is a virtue. So we're going to be patient and wait.
Do you want the Conor fight?
Yeah. I'd be lying if I told you no.
Okay.
I've stated that openly. I wanted the Conor fight. It sets up him and his future. He's gotten into this game 15 years ago to make a whole lot of money. And, you know, sometimes those fights come once in a lifetime. And if it's him, it's him. I do believe if it's not him, Jorge will set himself up with Usman to become that. And every fight going forward, he would be just as big, if not bigger than Conor.
Okay.
Because then what does that say? Conor doesn't want to fight the guy that he came up to 174 and the whole BMF stuff. I think Conor's, you know, sort of backtracking on
cold
it.
Feet.
Yeah, so, you know, you can't do that.
Do you think the UFC doesn't want it?
Cold feet.
I don't really think it matters if the UFC wants it or not. I think Dana's always done what the fans want. So, you know, if the fans are out there screaming for Jorge versus Conor, then I think Dana will come through with that like he usually does for the fans.
Do you think Conor?
Say it again?
Do you think Conor doesn't want it?
That I may think is more realistic. Conor, if he wants something, Conor openly says it. But we heard Conor in this last fight. We call out about 10 different fighters, 5 different fighters. So it's weird. You know, he has options and, you know, God bless him, but we have options as well. So, you know, I know a lot of people are still clamoring for that Nate fight. Part two, that's another one that's on the table. If Usman's out, completely gone. I know Jorge wouldn't mind putting an end to those rumors, you know, to the disbelief that's going out there as well. So, you know, it's another pain. Like I said, if Conor doesn't take the fight, he's going to get passed over. It won't dim his light until it comes to the point where, you know, it's the only option, and then he's not going to have him anymore.
Understood. All right. Yeah. Good stuff, guys. Thank you, Jorge. All right. I think we now know your stance. The team stance on it all.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for doing this.
Let's talk about some positive stuff.
Oh.
What did you eat today?
I actually had a breakfast burrito for breakfast as well. Here, they have a cafeteria here at ESPN. It was very nice. I had it in the morning.
Was it kosher?
Are you serious? You're putting me on the spot. It wasn't.
Your career is based off putting me on the spot. And I put you on the spot for like 5 seconds and you turned on me like a hyena.
I'm sorry.
Wild animal.
I'm sorry. It wasn't.
Was it kosher or not?
There was turkey. Not kosher turkey in it. I'm sorry. My parents are going to be so mad. My mom's going to text me in the next 3 minutes. How dare you? Why would you ask me this, Jorge? I've been so good to you over the years. Why would you put me on the spot?
So good to you. I want to start a little controversy here. Get you, you know, get you back out there, man.
It reminds me of the time you were in New York and you were like, don't be asking me those soft questions. And then I'm like, all right. And I ask you about your dad and you're like, oh, no, 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 no. I'm not talking about this. I'm not talking about that. I was like, what? You just asked. No soft questions.
Sorry.
Both of us. We pretend to be tough guys, but deep down we're just softies, right?
We're Build-A-Bears deep down inside. Big teddy bears, you know?
Yes, I'd like to think so. Personally, I thought you looked good. I will admit I didn't get the connection with the, you know, with the robe and everything. I didn't remember that he wore that, you know, 2 years ago or whatever, but I thought it was a cool look.
Because you just will remember the best, you know? You don't remember those, like, second and third place memories. You just remember the good dope shit, you know?
Mm-hmm. Respect. But where do you even think of that? Like, where does that even, like, come from?
My imagination box.
Okay, so you remembered it.
No, I remembered that I wanted to wear this robe because I didn't really feel like getting dressed. Part of it was I didn't fucking want to get dressed.
Mm-hmm.
And be at the end all hot and clothes and fucking everybody wants to take pictures. Well, I just want to be comfortable, you know? And that's how I was comfortable. I'm usually in a bathrobe most of the time when I'm home from the gym or butt-ass naked, you know? Either or, depending on the temperature and stuff.
So you're actually saying it was a coincidence?
It wasn't. It was a. No, it wasn't a coincidence.
Oh, okay. All right. And he had the bottles there and everything. It was a nice scene. He did address you. He said that you looked like a grandmother watching an Irish soap opera. So that was an interesting.
This grandma, man, must have already laid an ass whooping on him. You know, grandma side with the shoes to the fucking face because he don't want it, man. Does he sound like Connor? Let me ask you, does it sound like Connor wants to fight, bro? Huh? Between me and you? Does it sound like that's the fight? Yes, I'm coming for this fight, mate. You know, all that shit that he likes to do. Does it, Ariel? Does it sound like that? You know him well. You're a Connor connoisseur.
Connor connoisseur. I feel like he does. I really do.
So then hopefully I'm wrong and you prove me right. Let's see, man. Let's see.
Okay.
Nice. Nice.
The arms broke. See that?
Yeah. Yeah. Courtesy of Ben.
Yeah.
But it's okay. We wouldn't have sold 5,000 of them if it wasn't for Ben, you know. So
Corporate Jake just told me we had to rap, unfortunately.
Corporate Jake, man. You know, everybody at your office is getting a bottle except Corporate Jake. That.
Wait, what? Everyone's what?
Everybody's getting a bottle over there at the Ariel Helwani show. We're sending the case, personalized names, everything, except Jake's ass. He ain't getting shit.
I agree. He's been on some bad behavior. By the way, my mom just texted me. Thank you very much, saying that she's very upset. Jorge is right.
You're welcome. You hadn't talked to her in a week, and I make this connection happen again. You're welcome.
All right. Well, thank you, Jorge. Much love. I appreciate the time as always. Well done on ABC, my man. Don't forget the little people. All right.
Never, man. Never, my boy. I see you soon, man.
All right, there he is, the one and only Jorge Masvidal, Game Bread, joining us with some interesting stuff following Saturday night. So I guess it wasn't a coincidence, or was it? Or was it not? Interesting times. I still feel like Conor wants to fight. I still feel like it's the biggest fight that they can make right now. I actually think it's down to two people as far as like what's realistic. Because again, we've already talked about the fact that, you know, Khabib is fighting in April, and we hope that I don't want to even put it out there that the Khabib fight might not happen. I don't even want to put that out there. So that fight's going to happen April 18th. And that's the fight that needs to happen next for the belt. Ferguson, Khabib, 12 in a row. It's got to happen, right? So that fight happens. We're not going to see him till the fall. Conor's not going to wait till the fall. So I'm just putting that to the side. I feel like the two that have the best chance of happening next, Nate 3, Jorge 1. Those are the two that I feel like have the best chance of happening next, are the most realistic to happen next. That's what I say. Nate 3, Jorge 1, both at 170. I would say a far third place would be Gaethje. And I don't really see anyone else. And I actually think that one of the reasons why the Gaethje fight isn't being talked about more is because I don't think he wants that vitriol. I think maybe his management might have something to do with it. Like, I think they like the fact that they're in a good place right now, that, you know, the build up to the Cerrone fight, was mostly positive, that there wasn't a lot of animosity, that there wasn't a lot of drama. I really think that they liked the way this whole thing built up. And I think that's important to them. And so to go back to the, I mean, not to say that they're going to try and avoid that by any stretch of the imagination at all, but I think that it's important to them to try to build on that. And in the post-fight interview with Conor, he says he doesn't think that he's there just yet. So what does that mean? At 170, he looked very healthy. He looked very thick. T-H-I-C-C. Or is it triple C? No, it's just C-C, not Henry Cejudo. So we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. By the way, I did see, speaking of triple C, I did see Captain Eric in Las Vegas, but he still doesn't want to talk to me. Still mad that I gave Eugene Behrman the Coach of the Year award. So I tried my best. I tried my best. But one day he has an open invitation. He could come on the program whenever he wants and we could talk it out. I told him this. I told Henry this. Come on the show. Talk it out. Tell me why you think I was wrong. Tell me why I messed up. And then we can move on. But for now, he's still upset. In a matter of moments, we're going to be joined by Audie Attar, who is the manager for Conor McGregor, who can probably answer a lot of these questions about Conor's future and what's next and really the moment there. Because like I said, when I walked into that locker room, and he doesn't like the narrative that this was his first victory since November of 2016, but that is in fact true. He just says, hey, you know, I just got beat once and I really didn't get beat. I got tapped. I didn't get concussed. I didn't get beat up. But it was a nice scene in there. Everyone was happy, celebrating. It was really cool to be a part of it in the McGregor locker room. So without further ado, let us say hello now to Audie Attar, the manager for Conor McGregor. Audie, how are you?
I'm doing well. Please excuse my voice, Ariel, but thanks for having me on.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you for being on. Did we lose the voice in celebration?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, just this. That 40 seconds was a very intense 40 seconds. So, you know, it was excitement from start to finish for our friends and our family. And just so proud of Conor for the performance he put in, but more importantly, the work that he put in leading up to this great event, UFC 246, this last weekend. So that's why the voice is gone. But so. You know, I don't know. I like this. I like this horse voice.
Yeah, right? It's fine. And it's well deserved because of everything that went into this. And other than his family, I mean, you have been by his side throughout everything, especially over the last 2 years, the ups and downs. You're always there when he needs that help. And there's been a few situations where he needed the help. And so to see it all culminate into this and to see how it all played out and to see the way the week played out, which I thought, like I said before, I thought he was on his best behavior and really got people to start loving him again and believing in him again. To see it culminate with a 40-second victory like that, how did you react? How did that feel inside?
I mean, you know, it was great to just see it all come together. But more importantly, it was great for the world to see who Conor McGregor really is. That's the Conor McGregor we know. That's the Conor McGregor we love. And I think he said it all week. It's not that he changed. He's just learning and growing and evolving. And that's the most important thing. So rather than it being a new and improved Conor, so to speak, this is just Conor present day. This is Conor with everything that's happened throughout the last 8 years that we've worked together, the good and the bad, the wins and the losses, and all you could do is grow, and all you can do is evolve. And if you don't, then, you know, you're effectively going backward. If you don't evolve, you're effectively dying, right? So, I'm just super proud of him. I'm so happy for him and his family and our team. It was just a great night, you know. And I think the reality of it is, and he said it best, you know, that the critics are going to constantly criticize him. So it's never good enough, no matter how good we do. But I think the one thing that's important, not only for Conor, but all athletes and their team, respective teams, is that you have to celebrate the wins, but keep pushing forward. Celebrate the wins, but keep working. At the end of the day, know who you are, know what you are. Don't let the media or the critics get you down. Let them motivate you. Let that be fuel for your fire. So I'm super happy for him, for his family, for our team, that he was able to really take everything that's happened up to this point, the good, the bad, the ugly, the wins and the losses, and really just show, you know, who he is present day and how he's how he's responding to all that, right? Because there's been so much said about him. Now, the one thing that I love that's also been said that he was able to prove people wrong was, God, he's being so nice. Is he going to perform? You know, is this a as people would criticize him previously and use this phrase, but was this a touch butt session? What's going on there, right? But I think he proved that not only was he just super focused, but the respect and the positivity throughout the entire fight week did not necessarily mean that you were going to see a less competitive or less aggressive athlete come fight night. So I'm just so happy for him. What an amazing performance, but more importantly as well, just so proud of the team and how we all stuck together and everything we've been working through. So another thing I'd like to say is hats off to Calvin Cerrone and his entire camp, his management, just pure class. You know, they've just been professional from the start of this thing. And, you know, it was just such an honor to be able to share, not only for Conor to share the octagon with them, but for us to share, you know, this great event together and putting it together. And the amount of exposure and work that went into this, you know, I just tip my hat off to them for all the hard work that they put in and just nothing but respect and appreciation for being able to work with one another, albeit on the other side of this thing, and create some magic this past Saturday.
As you know, Adi, being in this business for a long time, on Monday after the fight, you don't really get a chance to, at least we in the media and the fans, we're over the fight, right? Everyone moves on. We want to know what's next. And so there's a lot of debate today about what is next and who could be next and when he could return. What would you like to see happen? If it was up to you, what are you going with?
You're right. That's often the case. But, you know, these athletes are human, right? Mm-hmm. So they're still processing everything that's happened. They're still, you know, conferring with their team. They're still enjoying the moment, or even, you know, just, and even if you lose, right, you're still in agony, right, over the night, right, and still processing all these different emotions with your closest loved ones and your closest team members. So, you know, it's hard to always say who's next, what's next. And it's just like there's so many options. Here's the reality. Red Panty Night's still in full effect. We know that. I think Conor did a great job of identifying so many different options and so many different opponents that he could face. And the one thing I've always said and I've maintained and I still hold firm to is that whoever Conor McGregor faces is going to be a big event, right? So at the end of the day, he's the biggest draw in combat sports, not just in mixed martial arts. And I think that there's options, you know. I think there's options for him, and I think he just needs some time to continue to process what just happened. And, you know, he put in so much work for 40 seconds. And, I still have over 300 unread messages. So wow. I can only imagine what his phone looks like, right? I mean, I'm nobody compared to who he is, right? So ultimately, I think you just got to give us some time. Let the dust settle. Let us take this all in. But more importantly, I think for him, he's just focused on the process still, right? Mm. Went out, had a great after party. You know, he was very disciplined. He still enjoyed himself, let loose a little bit. But, you know, he went home around 3:30 and had a bite to eat with his family, and it was in bed. That's it. And he woke up the next day and he was pinging me all these different ideas and thoughts. And from a professional standpoint, even just from an after party standpoint, right? So it's just great to see him in good spirits, but still just dialed in. So, you know, the plan is really to get back to work. And ultimately, I think once the dust settles, once he processes all these things, and I think as the work continues, he's going to really understand where he wants to go. And that's just the most important thing, because a preparer Conor McGregor is a Conor McGregor I think everyone wants to see, right? Everyone enjoys to see. So let's just see what motivates him. That's the most important thing. Oh. At this stage of his career, he doesn't have to jump into anything just because of what someone says or what ranking say. You know, it's just really about what motivates him at this stage of his career.
Let me ask you this, because we had Jorge on before, and he says he doesn't believe Conor wants to fight, but it seems like the fans really want it. We just did a poll, 50,000 votes, 54% say they want Masvidal next. Overwhelming favorite. Is this accurate?
Listen, nothing but respect for Jorge. I think he's been, you know, a guy that has worked his tail off and has some amazing success, you know, in the last 12 months in particular, you know, and he's put himself in position to garner this type of attention and respect, and it's well deserved. So I congratulate him, and I tip my hat off to him, and I'm happy for him now that he launches Mescal. But ultimately, it's going to be whatever Conor wants. That's the reality of it. So whoever Conor gets motivated and wants to compete against is going to be who the next fight is. It could be Jorge. It could even be Aldo, right? So at the end of the day, you know, right now what we need to do is still just enjoy the moment, process everything that's happened, get back to work. And, you know, when Conor decides who he wants to face next, then the team will know and the world will know.
I asked him in the post-fight interview if he could guarantee that he'd be back before the summer because, of course, he says he wants to fight three times. Do you feel like that is possible just looking at the schedule? I mean, they created this pay-per-view out of nowhere. This wasn't even on the book, so I kind of feel like we can't even go by the UFC schedule. If he wants to fight, they'll make it happen. But do you think we'll see him back before the summer realistically?
You're right. I think it's all about when he wants to compete. I think that's the bottom line. Do I think it's plausible that he come back and competes for a second time before the summer? Absolutely. It's part of the plans. It's something he said numerous times, not only privately but publicly. So let's just see. You know, there's a few moving parts here. I think you know, as I just said, he has to continue just to get through this event, because it's not done just because the event is done, right? So I think that's a very realistic scenario, but we have to kind of see what motivates him. That's the most important thing at this stage in his career.
Okay, and as far as the motivation, how do we now make sure that he doesn't lose focus, right? He said a big part of it is, I don't, you know, if I'm focused, I don't get into trouble, right? I don't get off track. This one was a smashing success, everything. He said he didn't drink, all this stuff. What do we do now to make sure that he doesn't now go off track?
Keep working. The reality of, again, Conor is a human being. The difference between Conor McGregor and you and I is that he is on a spotlight for everything he does. He sneezes, it's on the news. He farts, it's on the news. Mm-hmm. He talks about, you know, losing focus and getting off track with work. He has to talk about it. He has to share his mindset and what happened, what he needs to do. You and I don't, for the most part, right?
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's just about continuing to attack it as he does, and he knows what he's doing, and trust that he has a great team around him, that we're constantly there for him at every step of this thing. So, you know, I think that the one thing that, you know, you can't necessarily say is what is it that he has to do? It's not like any secret sauce. It's just about what we all have to do, you know, and he said it throughout the entire week, and he just had to reset, he had to refocus. We all sometimes lose focus. We all sometimes, you know, make mistakes and, you know, have to effectively just kind of get back on track and focus on what got us there and just think back to the basics of, you know, what we were doing to get to that point of our life, but also understand where we want to go in this stage of our life and career, and continue to do the things that got us to this point, and hopefully those things will continue to get us to the next point of whatever those goals are, right?
So
hopefully, yeah. I not only don't have a voice, but, you know.
I understand. I'll just ask you one more. Was there ever a point in the entire process, you know, over the last 2 years, everything that happened, where you thought that maybe he wouldn't get back to this point?
No. I've been fortunate to be around high-level athletics. I've been in this business almost 15 years, been around high-level athletics for over 20 years. You know, there's people that I've worked with that I would, you know, you could see that, you know, the writing's on the wall, so to speak. And there's even others that have been, have turned me off from wanting to work with them. It's never been the case for them at all, you know. I'm proud of who he is. I'm proud of what he's done. And I'm even more proud of what we're about to do.
Oh.
At the end of the day, you cannot just achieve what he's achieved in his life by being just someone that's average, by being someone that's a lucky person, so to speak. Because a lot of people always say that about Conor, right? Oh, he's lucky, or, they promoted him, or, oh, he got easy fights, or he was just the right place, the right time. Nah, man, that guy has earned everything he's done in his life and his career. And he's going to continue to work hard, just the way he did, to get to that point of his life and career, to achieve this next phase of his life and career. And I think that this one is going to be the greater one, because he's learned so much. He's evolved so much, right? So I'm just really excited that he kicked off our season in such great fashion, right? Mm. I mean, a 42nd finish against such a legend in Cowboy Cerrone, to add yet another record to his career. And I'm just excited, So here we are, fight two of the season.
And,
on next.
And rightfully so. And the train doesn't stop for you guys. Chris Cyborg making her Bellator debut this Saturday. That's a huge fight against Julia Budd. So get ready for that and feel better. Get the voice back for that big one. Audie, I appreciate the time very much.
Thank you. I'm super excited. I don't think I'm going to get my voice back, unfortunately. I fly home tonight and then straight into fight week with Chris. So I'm super excited. She's getting ready to make history in her own way.
Yes.
If she's able to achieve what she's been working her tail off to do and win this Bellator belt, she'll be the first mixed martial artist in the sport's history to be a Grand Prix champion. So at the end of the day, having belts and all the different major promotions along her career is just something that she's going to be able to continue to add to her illustrious career as well. So I'm so excited for her.
Congrats to you and the team, Audie. Thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you, Ariel.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. There he is, Audie Attar, president of Paradigm Sports Management. Now, there was only one proper way to, pardon the pun, end today's program. It's with Conor McGregor's longtime head coach, friend, the man who has been by his side throughout this entire journey from day one in mixed martial arts. And of course, he was by his side Saturday night in Las Vegas. He was in his corner watching that quote unquote beautiful destruction of Donald Cerrone. John, how are you? What is that? What are we spraying?
Spruce. How's it going, Ariel?
Going great. Nice smile. You seem to be in great spirits. Congratulations to you and the team. By the way,
it was being a good weekend.
I bet it was. Beautiful destruction. Was that what you had in mind?
Picture perfect. Pretty much what I saw. So, yeah, I couldn't be happier. And I really enjoyed my man Audie's interview there. Yeah, he sounds a bit rough. Audie.
Yes.
God bless him. But we're all enjoying ourselves. We got. Christmas was postponed this year. Everybody kept their head down. Everybody kept working hard. So for it to pay off and get a good result like that is very rewarding.
Can I ask you now, in retrospect, what was the game plan? Was it to come out that quickly? Was it even maybe to miss the shot and then have him hit the hip? What was the game plan? How much of this did you orchestrate?
The thing about ring rust, as they call it, not too worried about that with Conor in any area, but there is if you haven't competed in a long time, that the desire for engagement, the desire for the first contact can sometimes be a little bit overwhelming. And I think that's what happened. Like even when we were walking towards the cage and he kind of started to run a little bit to the cage, that's somebody that's going to be very enthusiastic for the first contact. So, I asked him afterwards about that, and it wasn't really planned. He just saw him, and he just wanted that first contact, that first engagement, a little bit overexcited, and fantastic reactions from Donald to slip under that, and then even more fantastic reaction, an incredible feat of athleticism. I've tweeted out, I thought it was actually the most impressive thing about the fight was how quickly he changed from throwing a punch to hipping in, sprawling in to defend a takedown. It was It was something to see. It reminded me of Frank Shamrock back in the day, getting underneath Igor for the big slam finish. Just the level of athleticism required for that was very, very impressive.
Have you ever seen Conor throw the shoulder strikes like that? Is that something that you actually work on?
Oh yeah. That's been going on for the last year or so. Gunny. Yeah, Gunny throws them too. It's the first time I've seen them to that level of effectiveness. Like they seem to cause a lot of damage. You know, obviously in sparring in the gym, you're not throwing shots with as much force to do that amount of damage. But when they separated and I saw what they'd done, I was pleased.
You know, Conor said before the fight that, you know, maybe make up for lost time, maybe, you know, get a couple rounds in, things like that. Did you see any scenario where this can go past the second round? Did you feel like, you know, especially after getting a sense for the week and how he was feeling and how Donald was, that this was going to be a pretty quick one?
Well, you know, you and I had a few off-camera conversations about this one. I wouldn't have been surprised for it to go late, because Donald has shown in the past the ability to absorb a lot of punishment and kind of drag fights into later rounds. I did say repeatedly that I thought this was going to be the best Conor McGregor of all time, but I didn't know it was going to be that good. I didn't know it was going to be this good a version of him. And he just really seems to have reached a different level of athleticism now than he's ever had in his career. He was always he always had an incredibly high fight IQ. And now that seems to be married to a Olympic level of athleticism. And it's somewhat terrifying and fantastic at the same time.
So that being said, does that mean you want to see him stick around at 170? If he's that good without the weight cut, why bother going to 155?
I mean, obviously, unless the title, I said that I don't see the reason for him to cut weight unless there's a significant, you know, there has to be a belt on the line. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, why would he do it? Stay at this weight. Don't cut weight. And then when the big one comes along, then shed the last 15 pounds.
I don't know if there's anything more to this, but I noticed in the post-fight interview, you were actually in the background and you kneeled down to the ground and you were just kind of like leaning, you know, against the cage there. And it looked like it was almost, you know, like you're breathing out a little bit. Do you remember that moment?
See too much, Ariel.
What were you thinking in that? It was almost like you were just taking a step back, if as much as you could go back in the cage, and just looking around and taking it all in after this this crazy journey. Do you remember that moment? Do you remember what you were thinking in that moment?
If you did this time last year, if you'd have said that's what was going to happen, I don't know if I would have believed. I would have loved to believe it, but I don't know if I would have. It's been 2019 for a number of reasons. Professionally, stuff going on personally back home. It was a rough year. So I just had to take a moment just to appreciate all that's happening. And that one meant a lot for more than just winning a fight.
Did you have a moment with Conor, maybe in the locker room at the after party, where you guys, you know, got to talk about everything you've been through and had to overcome to get this moment?
He's swamped after post fight. You guys all want interviews, and he's being pulled in 100 different directions. But he did give me a squeeze and say, happy birthday. That one's for you.
That's right. What a birthday. I was going to get to that. What a birthday present for you, January 18th, to experience that and be there with
the second fight on my birthdays.
That's right. The first one, Dennis Seaver in Boston 5 years ago. Yeah. This one, obviously, a big deal. And look at you guys back in the day, since day one, his side. It's a pretty amazing thing. It really is. And so now, you know, like I said to Audie, everyone's like, okay, what's next? What's next? What's next? Do you actually think it's conceivable that he can return before the summer?
Before the summer, I'd be very surprised if he wasn't going to compete before the summer.
Oh, wow.
What have you heard?
No.
Am I at the missus?
No, you say very surprised. So it's not even like, yeah, that's what you want, but you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I love it.
Well, there was talk of March or April, like, so I don't know what this is before the summer. Definitely going to be competing before the summer. What I think would make sense was that we get ready, we prepare for the April fight. Mm-hmm. If one of those guys is unfortunate enough to not be able to make the walk, that we're ready to go. And then if that's not there, if the guys make it, schedule one within a few weeks of that, April fight. And then you're kind of on the same timeline as those guys for a fight a couple of months after that.
Mm. Who would you like to see him fight if it's not those guys?
Justin Gaethje at 170. That would be my personal preference.
Really? Why?
Because he's another lightweight, but why have neither of them have to cut weight? And you know, that's the goal. Well, I'll be careful with my words here. The kind of vision is getting that 155 pound belt back, so it's a step towards that.
Okay, because you know, the fans seem to want Masvidal.
Sure, and who knows? It could be that. If you're just asking,
sure,
my humble opinion and my desire, that would be it. But it'll be Audie and Connor and the UFC that make those decisions. I'll just be in the background with the spit bucket.
Could I ask? I mean, because I think this is a real thing. He was in such great spirits last week, right? I mean, it was really amazing to see him. And I think this is a real thing that needs to be brought up. You book him against Justin Gaethje. We know who Justin Gaethje's manager is, and we know how he feels about Justin Gaethje's manager, and he talked about it in the press conference. Isn't there fear that we get off track again and these bad feelings come up and it just becomes venomous again and the Khabib stuff? Don't we want to try to stay away from that? Maybe I'm wrong. Is there any of that that's a concern?
There's always risk
right.
in life. You know, you get out of bed in the morning, you could be smacked by a bus. Like, there's always risk. But we're moving forward and putting our energy and our focus on ourselves. We've always had great results when there's been no opponent. Mm. When it's been, they're all the same. We've heard those phrases. And that's what I hope to continue. And not to focus on what other people are doing and other people trying to go to reaction or the people trying to distract us. That we're just working away in the gym. We have the team is even tighter now than it's ever been. We have a really good team going now, and you know, the Crumlin Boxing lads back on board now, and I feel we're in a really special time. So that's going to be the focus, is what we're doing, not what anybody else is saying or what anybody else is doing.
Fair enough. He told me when we sat down after party Saturday night, off Sunday, he's back to training Monday. Has he trained yet, or is that still the plan? Is he going to be training today? Is he going right back?
No, he actually, we were chatting yesterday about going to the PI, about going to the gym last night. It didn't happen, but we were, you know, talking about a few things in the fight and saying, oh, let's go down to the gym. He'll be back in. I imagine we'll do something either today or tomorrow, yeah.
Is there any plan, as far as you're concerned? As he said, he wants to be active because when he's active, he doesn't lose focus. So how do we keep this same energy, right? Where, you know, he's sober leading up to the fight. We're not drinking. We're not miscommunicating or not communicating. How do we replicate what just happened for all the other fights?
By having good systems. That's what I spoke to yourself about. Having good systems that not too focused on goals. I'm not too focused on this fighter on this date, because you can kind of say, well, that's months away, so we can do this or we can do that. But focusing on systems, and the systems that have worked very well over the last year, is having structure, is having set training times, is living life a certain way, and it's actually giving us great rewards. So it's a case of keeping that going and, yeah, just sticking to systems. That's 2020 systems.
I know this is somewhat of a subjective question, but is it possible if all that actually, you know, stays in place and he does, you know, remain focused, is it possible that the 2020 version of Conor McGregor could be better than the 2015, 2016 version of him? Do you believe that?
Have I not said this?
I don't know.
This is not a return to the Eddie Alvarez Conor McGregor or the Aldo Conor McGregor. This is a new and improved and better version. The athlete you saw on there for all too short a time, unfortunately, is a better Conor McGregor. This is not a return. This is a better version. And we're in for some good times.
Wow. Was there any point last week where you're like, this is going too well?
Yes. 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 I was saying this to Orla. This, everything I seemed to touch last week, where actually, you know, I think playing the lottery is a tax on people that don't understand statistics. So I don't do it, but we were going to play the lottery because everything just seemed to go perfectly.
Right.
Like, it couldn't have been better. Just how we were, everybody was getting on the team. It was my birthday weekend. There's some stuff in my personal life. It just, everything just seemed to turn gold. So I was, although Orla wouldn't marry me, but besides that, I tried to bring her down to the little white chapel after the win, but she wasn't having it. So
that would have been perfect.
Besides her refusing my 57th proposal, it's she's laughing at me. It's I don't know. I feel my life is very weird, Ariel. Even last night we got to meet do you know the Black Rifle Coffee Company?
Yeah.
You know those guys? We met them randomly yesterday. Matt, second best, shout out to him. Just had a great day with him. I'm off now to drive a tank.
Oh, wow.
Believe it or not. And shoot some big guns like the Americans love to do. I don't know. I'm waiting for something to go wrong, but
hopefully not.
Everything seems to be just going right.
And to that point, you're taking selfies with Tony Robbins in the cage after a Conor fight, of all people.
Big Tony.
Isn't that amazing? How big of an influence was he in this training camp?
All right, I'm going to be honest and say I didn't know much about that world. I'd seen clips of it, and I thought it was a little bit of American kind of nonsense. But that man is a genuinely great person. It was just to be around people like that that have gone through. You told me a little bit about his personal life and how he got to where he was today. And when you're around people that have really achieved greatness through the only ingredient that matters, and that's raw hard work, it only lifts you. It only gives you a boost. So we're kind of new. You know, some of the techniques he was working with us, some of the Conor's always, his gift was his visualization abilities. But Tony's had to take that to another level. He's had to give us a different language, a different vocabulary to use in that world, and it's great. And we only did it for a couple of weeks. And another guy, Brad, what's his name? Brian Bradley from the 49ers. He is a, what would you call him, a postural breathing kind of coach. And Tony brought him in as well, and we've only worked with him 2 weeks, and I felt there was a difference already in that. So thank you very much, Tony and Brian, for that. But that's going to continue on through 2020 now, and things are only going to get better for us.
My big takeaway, you see what happens when you come on the show Monday? You get the victory. Monday of the fight, you see?
I make mistakes, but I don't repeat them, Ariel.
You see? I'm trying to tell you. So happy for you guys.
Can I use this moment for just one quick message?
Please. Yes.
The best thing I thought about the fight was Conor's ability to change from throwing a punch to hipping in for a sprawl. And that's because he has a fast brain. A fast brain is a fast fighter. And Conor's always been very mindful of how he's protected his head. in training and you know, in, obviously in competition is competition, but most fighters, you're only going to do that a couple of times a year. And that was a lot of, I get a huge amount of messages in my inbox from young and up and coming fighters. And if there was one thing I would want to pass on would be to look after your head, keep the head contact light, keep the head contact minimal, because your best attribute is you have a fast brain. Because as soon as you, if you get damaged there and you're unable to react to things quickly, forget all lifting weights, forget all martial arts techniques. It's all gone. So fast brain, fast fighter, look after your head.
Mm, well said. Great way to end it. Thank you so much, Coach. You know, I don't take these moments for granted. I know you guys get hit up, you know, by everyone. So I really appreciate, you know, the Monday of fight week and afterwards. I know you could do a lot, like drive tanks around Las Vegas. So I appreciate the time very much. And happy birthday to you. And congratulations to you, the entire team, on an amazing special night on Saturday night.
Thank you so much, Ariel. Great chatting to you.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, John. Thank you so much to him. Thank you so much to Adi as well for coming on. And again, congrats to the team. Things are just a little more interesting. Again, like I said, when Connor is around and when he's fighting actively and when he's winning, it gets even more interesting. You see the kind of buzz it generated on Saturday. You see the kind of attention. You see the sporting world stopping when he fights. You are a liar if you cover this sport or if you are a fan of this sport, if you say otherwise. That's not being, you know, a fanboy. That's not being biased. That's just facts. And there's other people who fall into that category as well. When Khabib fights, when John Jones fights, absolutely. But it's just a little different when Conor fights, and you saw that again on Saturday, and it was good to see that again. So we are done. It's been a fun day. It's been a crazy week. Holy smokes. It's like a whole whirlwind. But I loved every second of it, loved covering it, and I want to thank all of you for watching our stuff, downloading our stuff, tuning into our stuff, listening to our stuff. Got to do two radio shows last week in Vegas. It was just so great. And everyone who works on the team here, there's so many people. You just see me and, you know, Brett and the host and stuff, but there's so many people who work behind the scenes, and they all deserve all the credit. It's an amazing team to be a part of. I'm very proud and honored to be a part of it. And I'm looking forward to now more talk about what is next for Conor and when he can return and all that stuff and more. But for now, we shall say goodbye. What a fun day it has been on the program. Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day to all of you. Thank you very much to Roxanne Modafferi. Congratulations to her. Thank you very much to Kevin Lee. What an appearance that was. Thank you very much to Michael Bisping. Go get the book. Out tomorrow. Quitters never win. Thank you very much to Diego Ferreira. Thank you very much to Holly Holm. Brian Kelleher, congrats to him. Congrats to Drew Dober. Thank you very much to Jorge Masvidal, as always. Thank you. Congrats to Adi Attar and, of course, John Kavanaugh. If you missed anything, check it out. YouTube, Twitter, Spotify, Apple, all those places and more. Back next week, same time and place. Until they say peace, I'm out of here.
Doctor came and looked at her, and my coach said, you know, keep it standing, keep it standing. And I hit her. I was trying to keep it standing, and she went down, so I thought, okay, let's go down.
Wait a second. Was that Roxy trash talk that we just heard? I feel like that's the first time I ever heard you sort of trash talk.
The same fact.
I didn't realize we was doing tune-up fights and, you know, all this little fake shit.
Zero in on this little recommendation right over here on the front cover, right over there. It says, Ariel Helwani, mixed martial arts reporter for ESPN. What do you think, Mike?
If a shoulder is hurting you, that means your chin is gone, and they already knew that. So, I'm not impressed.
Well, and I don't want to hear any crap about, oh man, but he was training those, and the torque that he gets in his shoulder strikes are unlike any other shoulder strikes known to man. No, that is not the case. Shoulder strikes, when somebody does that, it's like, come on, can you stop shouldering me in the face because it doesn't hurt?
Did you notice Jorge Masvidal wearing your Versace robe?
Yeah, I don't know what that was about. Talk about baloney, because that looked ridiculous to me. The grannies in Ireland wear house coats. Watching the soaps, you know, like the soap opera shows. So, like, me nanny wears that.
This grandma, man, must have already laid an ass whooping on him. You know, grandma style with the shoes to the face.
Are you a model as well? You have, like, the technique down pat.
I'm interested. Any way I can make money outside of getting punched in the mouth.
Usman or Connor?
Well, I make a considerable larger paycheck with Connor.
Yeah.
If it's on a personal side, if it's all potatoes and tomatoes mean the same, I would take a lot more pleasure in dismantling Usman's face than I would Connor's.
It sounds like you're kind of moving on.
I'm not going to sit here and bullshit with nobody, man. If you want to fight, we're going to fight. I'm going to baptize you, and you're going to go to 55 and, you know, go do your own thing down there.